It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this, the second day of the month of November 2017, a brand new month before us. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to pick out a free screen name and a free password and jump in the free chat room. Yes, indeed. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. Just go there, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, as mentioned, and you will immediately be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jug of Punch and Squeaky and VT Blom, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to once again become Man Cave, as well as midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Yes, indeed. We've got a rousing little thorn in the side Thursday. I think I've got some fun that we will have. We are hot, live, and true on both headon.live and whiterosesociety.org, which is the stream that powers TuneIn and Stitcher and Roku and headonradionetwork.com. So hopefully we won't have any streaming issues whatsoever this evening, although... this is kind of interesting. The microphone seems to have been touched by the healing hands of faith or something in the last 24 hours, which is kind of wild. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, Thorn in the Side Thursday for this Thursday, the second day of November 2017. And as is the case... the program always begins with thanks, because instead of telling you what company, what corporation, what transnational entity is bringing you the program, I'll just tell you names, because there are no corporations or transnational entities. There's only people who are dedicated to the proposition that we need independent, progressive conversation, broadcasting. And that's how we get the program out to you. Thank you. So thank you very kindly, first and foremost, to Jill out in Jillinois. See what I did there? Jillinois, get it? Thank you, Jill. Thank you very, very kindly for finishing off Shirley's challenge before airtime this evening. So challenge met. Yay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Jill. Jill said, please apply this to Shirley's challenge if possible. I can't listen live, so I don't hear the program until the next day, if not used wherever needed. Well, that's where it was needed, and that's what happened, so that makes life considerably better. I hate to leave those challenges just laying about. Meanwhile, thanks also go out to Reggie. Thank you very, very kindly. And to our other subscribers for the evening, we have four others. Thanks very kindly to Jeff. Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you to Darren in California. Thank you, Darren. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you very much, Albert. And finally, thank you very much to Elizabeth in New York. Thank you so very much, Elizabeth. It is much appreciated. It's how we keep this all going. And with me going away next week, remember, no program Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week. Well, it makes it a little less of a hole for us to crawl out of. So we took care of Shirley's challenge yesterday, which means that got met, which means, and then we've got this for this evening. So it's actually quite hopeful. If we can raise $200 this evening, and if we can raise the usual $200 tomorrow evening, then we won't have much hole to fill in, especially after the Patreon subscribers kick in. In point of fact, if we raise $200 this evening, and $200 on tomorrow evening, then Patreon kicks in, and we'll be okay. We'll be okay, and we'll just have to do the usual fundraising when I get back for Friday on the front porch. And isn't that wonderful? Alongside all the other subscribers for the first of the month, we will be A-okay. So thank you, one and all. I find that a lot more pleasant. A lot more pleasant indeed than hawking some product that I really don't have much. Well, you get the idea. Although there are some products out there that I would be happy to share the good news of with you. There are products out there that I use, things that make me happy, and you know sometimes I tell you about them. Well, this is one of those times. Absolutely. When you're feeling a little bit low, when you feel like you just don't have the verve that gets you that you need to get you through the day with the energy and the zip that you need. Well, friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, moms and dads, what you need is sassy sassafras. That's right, sassy sassafras from the hardworking chemists and biologists and organic farmers at Horn Labs will put a smile on your face, a twinkle in your eye, a gleam in your smile. Sassy sassafras from Horn Labs is, of course, entirely GMO free, cage free, free range, cruelty free, vegan, non-gluten, and gluten-free, and it's everything you could possibly want in a nutritional supplement made of sassafras. That's right, sassy sassafras from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, FOBCODMOUSE, sassy sassafras from Horn Labs. Now, I got to tell you, I've never been a big fan of sassafras. Never much cared for it at all. But thanks to sassy sassafras from Horn Labs, well, I just feel so much better these days because I'm getting all my sassafras goodness in a couple of little capsules that I take every morning. And it just makes me feel right as rain. Sassy sassafras from Horn Labs. Please note, this is not a free call because there are no operators standing by because, like all the other Horn Labs products, Sassy Sassafras is a complete bullshit nutritional supplement. It's just that here at the Horn, we tell you up front that Sassy Sassafras is a bullshit nutritional supplement, as opposed to all of those others who will sell you bullshit nutritional supplements that do abso-goddamn-lutely nothing for you. Sassy Sassafras from Horn Labs, because you can't be a real talk radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the audience. Right? Sassy Sassafras from Horn Labs. I just feel sassy saying Sassy Sassafras. Wouldn't you? Try it and find out. And remember, if you order a 2-month supply for only $62, which is just a couple of bucks more than the price of two $29.95 bottles, well, we'll send to you a little bundle of useless test strips that you can use to make sure that Sassy Sassafras is the bullshit nutritional supplement that we promise you it is. And hey, since it's sassafras, it tastes better than paleo chicken bone chocolate drink. Lots better. Plus, with no lead and no arsenic. Because there's no nothing. Sassy Sassafras from Horn Labs. Yes. That may be... I almost wish there was Sassy Sassafras. I'd probably take it. It sounds just righteous. Mm-hmm. Yum. Now, as it stands, we'll just try to raise $200 this evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50. 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and we'll round up for that half a cent from $3.125, and we'll put that in the we'll put that in the Bugatti oil change fund. Mm-hmm. Sassy Sassafras, according to Devin, it is banned in the United States for use in commercially mass-produced foods and drugs by the FDA as a potential carcinogen. Well, what do they know? Arthur asks, but Bob, will it help with my severe false hope deficiency? Sassy Sassafras absolutely will. That's what the sassy and Sassy Sassafras is all about. It's going to make you sassy. And there's no false hope among sassy citizens taking Sassy Sassafras. That's right. Thanks very kindly, thanks very kindly to Jeremy, who kicked in to get us started this evening. This may be my last contribution other than Patreon for a while. Currently have three family members, all fighting stage 4 cancers. One's terminal. The other two are my girlfriend's father and my very own girlfriend. None of them have curable cancer, just treatable. Okay, rant over. We'll accept any good vibes and even prayers of the Horn family if they want to do that. I'm so sorry. I'm so very sorry, Jeremy. God Almighty. All in one. Two in one family, and then two more. Yeah, you've got all the good feelings that we can muster. You really do, Jeremy. Thank you. Okay, then. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Remember, Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to those stories, those news events. That kind of make us go, ow! Because of the stupidity involved in them. Oh, hey, wait! Before we move into the news, a quick testimonial from Brother Deacon Asa. I just ordered my 3-month supply of Sassy Sassafras and had great luck using discount code. We see you coming from three paces away. Share with your friends and family. Will do, Brother Deacon Asa. And enjoy your Sassy Sassafras, and make sure you share your test strip results with us. Sassy Sassafras. Steam distillation of dried root bark produces an essential oil, which has a high safrole content, as well as significant amounts of varying other chemicals, such as camphor, eugenol, 5-methoxyeugenol, ascarone, and various sesquiterpenes. Many other trees contain similarly high percentages, and their extracted oils are sometimes referred to as sassafras oil, which once was extensively used as a fragrance in perfumes and soaps, food, and for aromatherapy. Sassafrol is a precursor for the dandestine manufacture of the clandestine. I can't read so good at a distance. Dandestine? Since when is that a word? Clandestine manufacture of the drugs MD and MDA and MDMA. And as such, sales and import of sassafras oil as a safrole-containing mixture of above-threshold concentration are heavily restricted in the U.S. So, well, it's pretty obvious that if you want to get yours, you're going to have to order some Sassy Sassafras soon. Mm-hmm. Oh, dear me. Oh, dear me. Subject line, bullshit products, GK writes, Bob, are supplements by Horn Labs proprietary, or could Tom Hartman sell them right alongside Super Beats? No comment. No comment. All I'll say is, you can't be a real talk radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. That's all. I mean, so that's why we've got all these different products. Because beets were taken, and chocolate chicken bone paleo nutritional drink with extra lead and arsenic was out, so we just started working through the alphabet. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky want to know, will Sassy Sassafras help me remember what I've done with the Target coupons I got in the mail the other day? I can't find them, damn it! I certainly, I'm almost certain they will, and I also know the frustrated sensation there, Scott, because the other day I got a coupon down at the Cut Rate Pharmacy for $6 off my next $20 purchase, and I noticed when I got it that it ran out on November the 1st, and remembering yesterday that it was November the 1st, I started looking around for the coupon, and all of a sudden it was like $6 had disappeared from my world. Even though it wasn't going to be $6 to me, it was still $6 off. Because I had it in my mind, I'd buy a package of AA batteries and a package of AAA batteries and just have them laying around for when it's time to change the batteries in, like, the mouse and the keyboard and the flashlights and things like that. And I couldn't find it, and it about drove me batshit. I finally did find it. You know where I found it? Right where I left it so I wouldn't forget where I put it. That's how that works. So off we go into the wonderful, wild world of the news. I thought I'd share with you first of all because it was such a heavy topic. I really couldn't get into it last night during prayer meeting Wednesday because, as creepy and goofy as prayer meeting Wednesday is, some things that are real failings. Deserve their own time, and this certainly does fall under thorn in the side Thursday. And I'm talking about the New York Times article that should probably win a Pulitzer about the lost children of Choom. And it sounds like it's spelled Choom, but it's not. It's spelled Tuam, and of course it's got some relation to a Latinate derivative, whatever. But it's a story that encompasses the heroic work of one woman who's never been paid a dime for anything that she's done, who has become a saint to her community, who keeps her door open and keeps and people sit at her kitchen table and try to figure out what may have happened to people in their past. By way of a setup, and go and if you just look up Tuam on the New York Times website, you're bound to find the article. It's long, it reads like a mystery novel, and it is worth your time. Dr. Bill talked about this extensively. I feel like I need to as well, because it exposes so many cracks in our society. And the fact that it also, it was also published by the New York Times at the same time that they published an op-ed piece by a guy named Ross Douthat. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right, and I frankly don't care. Bemoaning the Protestant Reformation. The irony was just way too thick. So, between the 1930s and the 1970s, there was an orphanage, sort of, run by a group of nuns called the Bon Secours. sisters. It's a French order of nuns, meaning good help. Our English word sucker, S-U-C-C-O-R, is probably related to that French word. And the way it worked in Ireland of the time is that if a woman got pregnant and was not married, she was deemed to be a whore, having gone astraddle the road, and was, you know, a bad person, and not a human being worthy of respectability in the eyes of both the government and the church, which at the time in Ireland was roughly one and the same. And so the Irish government just didn't want a bunch of unwed mothers walking around all pregnant and stuff. The next time you hear some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian bemoaning fatherless children, or bemoaning, as they often are wont to do, the way that women are treated in Islam, maybe ask them if they've ever heard of the lost children of Chum. It's a heartrending, it's a sickening story. So this mother and baby facility was set up in Chum, and women would be taken in, as would their illegitimate children. The children would be scarcely cared for at all, cared for in circumstances of poverty that make a Charles Dickens novel look like Vanity Fucking Fair. And the women would be worked like draft mules. And the children would die. You could say that by the time all the numbers were tallied, Chum was a bit of a death camp for unwed mothers and their children, particularly the children. Because that's what it was, a secret that was kept for years and years and years. And eventually, after it had been closed in the 1970s and the Bonsecours sisters had moved on and had dug up some dead Bonsecours sisters who had been buried on that consecrated ground, because it was consecrated church ground, but then it had to be deconsecrated, and so they moved them to cemeteries in France where the ground was still consecrated. Well, one day, some kids were playing nearby, And they had slipped over to that area to snatch some apples from apple trees that were growing there. And the long and the short of it is that they found, and this story first broke back in March, so we've talked about it briefly before. They found an old septic tank. And in that septic tank were little, bitty, tiny bones. By the time the counting was done, it turned out that there were the bones intermingled of some 796 infants ranging from months old to years old. Children baptized into the Roman Catholic faith, churched, as they say. And they were buried without ceremony, without mass, without any of the trappings that the Roman Catholic Church has promised people for 2,000 years is essential and central to going and living a happy life after they're dead. They died of disease, they died of malnutrition. Ireland has been rocked by this scandal. the Bon Secours sisters have maintained a position of, and that's pretty much it. And the most that, and the most that, that can be done is to try to help family members figure out who among their loved ones were among those bones. Yeah, somehow the moral superiority of Christianity just sort of pales when you read that story. But within a week or so of the publication of that article, there was Ross Douthat, D-O-U-T-H-A-T, do that, Douthat, done that, didn't got that T-shirt, I don't know. I think it's an old name because there's a Douthat State Park in old Virginia. I pass roadside markers for it when I'm driving to D.C. every time. I guess maybe that they're a family that goes way back. Don't know much about him except to say that he's the resident religious maniac on the op-ed page of the New York Times. He's a right winger, you know. But he penned a column a couple of days ago to bemoan the Protestant Reformation. Burn them. Burn some sense into them, I say. Burn the lot of them. That'll teach them. That'll learn them real good. Set fire to them. Then they'll know who the real, true, holy Mother Church faith is, by God. Among the way, he says ignorant, stupid, drop-dead, dumb things like, looking back through the chronoscope of religious history then, the modern secular liberal is a Leninist. He watches Christendom tear itself apart and thinks the worse the better, since only out of the wars of religion can his own society be born. Yeah, that makes him Leninists, all right. Never mind the fact that nobody paid a train ticket for him to ride from, you know, Germany into Russia. They're Leninists. Yeah, you betcha. But Ross Douthat, you can read it for yourself. Ross Douthat is terribly, terribly, terribly upset that we're not all worshiping the same God under the same church the same way, because things were so much better back when everybody was Roman Catholic. And the fact of the matter is, if you're Western European, if you're of Western European stock, white folks, then chances are, and it's really sort of undeniable, chances are, somewhere back there, y'all was Roman Catholic. Unless, you know, you're Russian or Serbian, you know, Orthodoxy, okay? Oh, the Croats were Catholic, the Serbians were, right. Greek Orthodox, that's it. But Western Europe, somewhere back, if you're come, y'all was Catholic too. Being Scots and English, mostly, boringly, it's almost an absolute certainty for me. No, it's not almost. It is an absolute certainty that somewhere back there, my bunch was Catholics. And somehow or another, we managed to stop being Catholic and didn't get burned to death for it. But the thing that Douthat blows past in its entirety is the fact that that one organization is responsible for the Protestant Reformation, and one organization only. You know who that organization is? Why, yes, it's the Roman Catholic Church. If you study the Great Schism that wound up with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 antipopes in the 14th century, one centered in Rome and the other centered in Avignon, under the thumb of the crown of France, you'll find that there really was a desperate desire among people to see the church reunified and get things or get the house in order. And so by the time that the Great Schism is over, in the 15th century, you get the Renaissance popes, people like Innocent and Sixtus and Alexander and Julius. Julius is the one who's played by Rex Harrison in the might and the majesty, or the passion and the passion and the prunes, or whatever it is. It's him and get your hands off my filthy statue, Charlton Heston. All about a very, very straight Michelangelo agonizing his way through the painting of the Sistine Ceiling. Why, yes, Arthur, as a matter of fact, that's very clever. Here, a little jingle for when life gives you linen, make lemonade. Ah, yes. But with the Renaissance popes, you get all of the all of the corruption and the venality and the grasping and the warring and the backstabbing and the selling. I mean, the church has never been more in business than it was in the 14th and 15th centuries, so that by 1517, along comes, as my dear friend the Jesuit-trained Roman Catholic said, that damn drunk potato-eating monk who gets so pissed off, he takes a hammer and a nail and nails up a list of grievances, his theses, on the door of the cathedral at Wittenberg. And then you've got spasms of slaughter and misery and death. And it wasn't just the Roman Catholic Church, it was the Protestants. They did their own version of slaughter and misery and death. Jean Calvin had no compunction whatsoever against setting fire to people. And so Ross Douthat kind of rings hollow with me in that. I don't fully understand that. I don't fully understand his nostalgia, except for the fact that I guess maybe he really does believe the claptrap that's on offer. I don't. I don't think there's any way that a cracker turns into Jesus meat in your tum-tum. And I don't think that there's any way that a little swallow of Lambrusco is going to turn into his blood in your tum-tum neither. And, of course, that was the great debate over which many people were killed, I'm sure, between consubstantiation and transubstantiation. Hell, back in the days of the early Greek Orthodox Church, they were slaughtering each other over prepositions. It's one of the first things about the development of Christianity that you find out is that they were willing to kill each other over how to believe in a guy who was described as the Prince of Peace. And somehow or another, the irony was utterly lost on the lot of them. Still, Douthat closes his column by saying, "The modern world offers many gifts, and the fact that Catholics and Protestants now dwell together without bloodshed is certainly one of them." Well, you know what? I wonder if that can be... I wonder if those blessings are transferable. Because, see, once upon a time, children, once upon a time, there was this country, and it was a Muslim country. And members of different Muslim sects lived together in peace. They lived next door to each other in houses on the same street. They didn't all gather into little warrens and ghettos and stuff and keep separate and not speak to each other. We're talking about Shia and Sunni, and women were able to walk down the streets without having to wear a goddamn beekeeper suit. And a little bit of harmony reigned in that country. That country, of course, was known as Iraq, and the guy who made that all work was known as Saddam Hussein. So I guess it's okay if Catholics and Protestants somehow learn to live together in peace. But if that's happening among in a Muslim population, well, as George H.W. Bush once said, "This will not stand." Yeah. But then he also overlooks the fact that through the years, and right up into the 20th century, the Catholics remained mad at the Protestants, and the Protestants remained mad at the Catholics. hello during the resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan. If they happened to be gathered together in a place that didn't have a whole lot of black folks to torment, well, that's okay. It was a good white Anglo-Saxon Protestant organization, so they would instead inveigh against the Catholics. The Jews, of course, always the Jews, right? So, and that, you know, brings us sort of full circle, because it was at exactly such a Klan riot in 1927 that old Fred Trump, Donald's pappy, was arrested at said Klan riot. And he wasn't arrested for opposing the Klan. And that Klan riot had been called not because the women folk were getting all raped up by the black people. No. That Klan riot was called in Jamaica, Queens, because law enforcement had, they said, been taken over by a bunch of Mary-worshipping papist mackerel-snapper Irish. See? Yeah. But that's not to say that the Catholics have clean hands either. Because up to this very moment, there are weirdos like Mel Gibson who want to go back to pre-Vatican II, and there are other weirdos like, for instance, the now fat-dead Tony Scalia, who was a member of Opus Dei, and those people are freaks, okay? Straight-up freaks. And they're part of a Catholic lay order that was founded by a priest who was elevated to sainthood by Pope John Paul II. What was his name? Jose Escriva, a Spanish priest, who was bosom buddies with dear old Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who, I might note, is still dead, but maybe trying to get a hand out of the dirt if you look at the news out of Spain lately. I'm one of those weird people afflicted by history, and I'm watching all this Catalan independence stuff, and I'm wondering, because today there was an arrest warrant issued inside the European Union for the deposed president of Catalonia. This ain't going to end well. Sooner or later, somebody's going to decide to take a pot shot at somebody else. Oh, Devin's on a roll this evening. You just sent me a picture of an emergency box with three nails in it. In case of second coming, break glass. That's a good one. And also a case of Leninade, complete with hammer and sickle on the label. You know, I think I'll stick with the Italian soda, blood orange soda that I've branded. Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, Steve was on it right quick. It was called Iraq, exactly. And because he is a fellow traveler in the cult of the dude, he offers up, "This aggression will not stand, man." The dude, yes. Well, that's like your opinion. So just a starting place there. That Holy Mother Church that makes Ross Douthat feel so warm and squishy in his maiden forms, casually got rid of the bodies of 796 babies and threw them into a septic tank. Yay, Mother Church. But they, you know, they've got all the rituals and everything, and well, and I'm not making fun here. You tell me, you're a good Roman Catholic, Steve. I got this idea. Wait a minute. Okay, one of these for Brother Deacon Asa. I'm sorry, Bob. Could you please repeat that? Did you say Mary-worshipping papist priests, or was that Mary-worshipping rapist priests? No, I got an idea. because, you know, you got to give the devil his due. Nobody does ceremony and claptrap like the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, it's like, you know, midnight mass on Christmas. It'll bring tears to a Baptist's eyes, because it has brought tears to this Baptist's eyes. I once attended, you know, a Latin, because I'd never seen a Latin mass. I was a little redneck boy from Alabama, and I saw a Latin midnight mass, and it was just beautiful. And the choking incense smoke and the singing and the standing and the sitting and the kneeling and the sitting and the standing and the kneeling and the sitting, and it was wonderful, beautiful. Now, I still didn't believe a word of it, but for pure ceremony, it was gorgeous. And as the article at the New York Times points out about the lost children of Chum, these are children who had certain promises made to them by virtue of having been baptized into the Roman Catholic Church. And if the church is good for anything, it's good for baptizing infants early so that they won't feel the licking flames of hell should they die at 5 months old like a bunch of these kids did. And as the article points out, one of the things you get is a funeral mass. And yet there was not a single funeral mass said for not one of these children, because none of these children were even ever registered or acknowledged to exist. They just got their little bodies wrapped in a blanket and chucked down into the septic tank. So here's my idea. Because, yeah, he's still got stupid, antiquated ideas on reproductive rights and whether priests should be able to marry and all the other things that makes the church a modern anachronism. But again, claptrap. They're good at it. The ritual. And I don't, you know, I'm not a Roman Catholic, so I don't have a dog in this hunt. But if you were really going to try to make amends for it, I'm of the opinion that Frank should get on the Pope plane. And I don't know what the biggest cathedral in Ireland is. I suspect it's probably in Dublin. No Irish prelate, no Irish bishop or archbishop should be allowed to get anywhere near this issue because, well, the Irish Church. But Pope Frank took St. Francis's name for a reason. And one gets the idea by virtue of the fact that the hardcore right-wingers in the College of Cardinals are shitting kittens with crocheted tails. Oh, thank you. Steve in New York says, for the record, Ross Douthat is a dick. Okay, thank you. But Pope Frank needs to get on the Pope plane and fly up to Dublin. And they need to do a Requiem Mass, if I'm getting the language right. He needs to do a Requiem Mass that is more pomp and more ceremony and more sorrow and more grieving and more magnificence, more high-minded churchy music and stuff. They need to do a Requiem Mass that's more of all of that than they've ever done for king or prince or queen or pope or any sort of, you know, great figure. And do it for those 796 babies that they claim to love so much that they won't let a woman make her own choices about whether or not to bear a child. Because I guess what I'm getting at is, in the final analysis of those 796 babies from Chum, what it boils down to is the best argument that has ever been made, and I'm not making it on the backs of 796 miserable, neglected, sick, ignored little babies, but it remains the best argument ever made in favor of a woman's right to choose. Because the Irish culture of the time said that a woman who was pregnant out of wedlock and who became visibly so became a fallen woman. And then since there, and then since the, you know, there, it takes two to tango, there had to be a daddy, and you know, it could easily have been Uncle Daddy in some instances. Then they needed to have some way of getting them out of sight. And yet to this day, the Roman Catholic Church preaches on and on and on and on about the precious little fetuses. When the septic tank at Chum turns every one of their words to dust in their mouths. But the least Pope Frank could do would be to, you know, go up there and do the right thing. And of course, all of this is, I got an email from Scott and Punky. Regarding the dead Irish babies' children, that horrific situation made me think of the 2002 Irish-British drama, The Magdalene Sisters, about three teenage girls who were sent to Magdalene asylums, also known as the Magdalene Laundries, homes for women who were labeled as fallen by their families or society. It's on one of the streaming services, Amazon or Netflix, and is a powerful indictment of the church. The Magdalene, and this is all wrapped up in that same social system that created the Magdalene Laundries. So if somebody wants to take this idea and go over to change.org and put up a petition and direct it to Pope Frank, that's fine. I'm not going to do it because I don't have the union card. But if somebody of the faith wants to do it, it just seems like operating within their own rules, it seems like a good idea. So having gotten that out of the way, we can move into other things, and I've got other things because there are other things and other thorns. Before it plumb evades me, I should probably point out one story. We all got so het up, and remember when I started talking about it, I said, "Hey, I'm taking the bait," and I know I'm taking the bait. We got so het up about John Kelly's dumbass, bigoted, ignorant remarks about how the Civil War came about as a failure of compromise. That we missed the actual, real, no kidding, honest to God story that arose from it. Because, yeah, that was dumb as shit, but the fact of the matter is, it wasn't the real splashy headline. It was one of those things that, and it worked. It worked to a certain extent. They got people to focus on his ignorant words about the Civil War, which were some on both sides are always more than happy to relitigate, even though the facts are all on our sides. We're arguing with stupid people, and to that extent, it's sort of a losing argument from the get-go. But the real story was elsewhere in that interview, because the whole interview goes down as a means of deflecting from the fact that Bob Mueller had just fired his opening salvo, if you will, his shot across the bow with the indictments of Gates and Manafort, and then the revelation that George Papadopoulos had been probably wearing a wire and talking to a lot of his old buddies. Mm-hmm. For all we know, one of whom was apparently, just guessing here, United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the real story. And the real story is that tucked away in the midst of everything else was a confession by none other than the chief of staff to the president of the United States of America. Now go back to yesterday. President Trump told, and I'm reading the tweet directly, at NYT Politics, New York Times Politics. President Trump told the New York Times Wednesday that he was, quote, not angry at anybody and not under investigation. This by way of trying to counter a raft of stories that shows a president who is pretty clearly wobbling along on three out of four wheels at this point in time, and wheel three is on the way off, sitting secluded and yelling at the TV and things like that, pissed off at Jared for having steered him so wrong. Well, I thought Jared was such a smart boy. I thought he had almost as good a brain as I do, and I have a fabulous brain. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm an excellent president. I president slowly in the driveway. Well, the reason that's a problem, the part about him not being under investigation, is because when he was being interviewed by Laura Ingraham, John Kelly said pretty much the exact opposite.
But we're in great hopes that it wraps up. It is very distracting to the president, as it would be to any citizen, to be investigated for something while at the same time trying to carry the weight of what being president of the United States means on his shoulder.
You got that? It would be very distracting to the president to be investigated. Mm-hmm. Which is a way of saying the president is under investigation. Which he is. But he's either such a pathological liar or so bone-deep ignorant that he doesn't know. Of course, I'm sure he's not a criminal, in his own mind. He's a legend in his own mind. But what I said about United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Well, he's gotten to that part of the criminal process, or he's gotten to that part of the process of being a criminal. Let's put it that way. Where he can't keep his story straight. You may remember, and I played the clip of it in the last few days. That exchange between him and Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, in which Franken pinned him down like a butterfly in a collection box. On the issue of whether or not he had contact with Russian, with Russian officials, prior to the election, Well, ever since, and in that testimony and in subsequent testimony, he complained about how the questions were unfair. But the bottom line was, he said, I did not have contact with that man, the Russians. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know nothing about nobody who knew nothing about no Russians. This, we obviously now know, is a lie, because the Papadopoulos plan to set up a meeting with with the higher ups, in, including Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, in the Russian government. Well, there was a meeting, and he was at it, and Trump was on one end of the table, and Sessions was on the other, and Papadopoulos was in the middle. And remember, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third sat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and was basically the highest ranking anybody with any sort of foreign policy experience whatsoever that the young Trump campaign could find to support him. Because most of the old hands, most of the veterans of foreign policy veterans of the Republican establishment were staying away from him in droves. And so then along comes Mr. Papadopoulos. And apparently he and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third had some conversations, and Geezer Disgustus described him as an excellent guy. He's an excellent guy. Knows lots of foreign policy. His foreign policy is slowly in the driveway. Well, now Sessions' memory is improving. Yeah. Because now he remembers that, yes, Papadopoulos brought it up, and he said, we cannot do this, and I never want to hear of this again. Fiddle-dee-dee. Yeah. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if we wind up with another hearing in which Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third clarifies what he meant when he said, didn't know nothing about no meetings with no Russians. Well, I meant, I didn't know there'd been any, but I said, let us never speak of this y'all again. That's what I, because again, I, even without having to put on the frayed purple robe with the appliqué moon and stars that are coming off of it, and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" written in glow in a dark ink across the front, and my busted ad magic eight ball that always says "Answer hazy, ask again later." Even without any of that, a week ago last Friday on the front porch, I mentioned that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third is probably the easiest get of an indictment that Mueller could go after. He just had a lot of stuff that he had to plow through with Manafort first. Now, here's a fun question, and I don't... There are no solid answers anymore. In Trump land, conventional wisdom is not wisdom at all. So here's the question. If Mueller would happen to just stumble into an indictment of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, would Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, in fact, resign as Attorney General of the United States of America? At this point in time, this is not at all certain. Exactly. Robert in Australia says, I have a fabulous brain. It's over there in a jar. Yeah, what's their name? Abby something. Mm-hmm. Abby? Last name? Normal. Yes. So keep an eye out for stories involving Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third, because the Third is turning and squirming. Or the worm is. Or something like that. Yeah. So here we are at the top of the hour. More stories to go into. And We'll delve into all of them in the next hour. It is, of course, Thursday, the 2nd of November, 2017. That means we've got the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. We've also got $195 to raise on the evening. By the way, I neglected to mention thanks going out to Will in Chicago. Thank you, Will, for your help last night. Note coming from Steve in New York. Why won't Mueller indict Sessions? My understanding is that Rosenstein is the one with the authority to fire Mueller. I think the reason Mueller won't indict Sessions is to keep the only buffer he can between himself and his termination. Well, that wouldn't, like I said, Sessions can't fire him. And maybe I just need a little more elaboration. Maybe I'm just a little ence day in the oggin nay. Rosenstein wouldn't automatically move up to attorney general. Rosenstein could fire him. Maybe I'm missing something here. Anyway, it's time for a break. And if you want to engage in the conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. You know the numbers, of course, 304-574-8178. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn gets you in. Oh, you're a cynical soul, Brother Deacon Asa. They don't even need Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to testify again. All they have to do is ask the Kremlin to produce the recording they have from that meeting between Trump, JDBS-3, and Papadopoulos, because you best believe the young Cypriot was wearing a wire during that meeting as well. The Kremlin's wire, that is. Now, that there is what you call a right interesting little thought. So we'll take a break and come back, and there's more thorns in this bundle of roses, believe you me. This is The Horn, Thorn on the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Show the prisoner who now stands before you was caught red-handed showing feelings of an almost human nature. This will not do.
Call the schoolmaster! I always said it come to no good deed.
Let me crazy. Over the rainbow, I am crazy. Bars in the window.
It's Thursday, November 2nd, 2017.
We also need to respect the science that we're relying upon to make decisions.
EPA Chief Scott Pruitt purges scientists from EPA science boards. Winters in the U.S. are getting shorter. ExxonMobil fined for Gulf Coast air pollution. Hurricane Maria has officially caused the longest blackout in U.S. history. Plus, the Trump administration proposes doubling entrance fees to your national parks.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This year, 6 million Americans were ordered to evacuate in Florida because of Hurricane Irma, and 250,000 around the country are displaced long term. We know how much Americans hate refugees. Wait till they have to deal with refugees from Mississippi.
Oh man, this is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the longest blackout in U.S. history?
Yes, the loss of electricity in Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria struck the island on September 20th, 6 weeks ago, is now officially the longest blackout in U.S. history. The lack of electricity for 70% of the island is blocking other vital systems like communications, sewage, and water treatment from coming back online.
I cannot even imagine being without electricity for that long. I can't imagine. Imagine being without it for a day, much less, what, 6 weeks now?
Yes. Meanwhile, winters in the United States are getting shorter thanks to global warming.
Thanks, global warming.
That's according to an AP analysis of more than 120 years of weather data, which found that starting about the 1980s, the first freeze of the year began arriving later and later, and spring began arriving earlier. Last year, the freeze season of 2016 was more than a month shorter than the average freeze season 100 years ago.
See, that's one of the problems, actually, with global warming. A lot of people kind of like it. My parents can play golf until December.
Yeah, but that shift in timing comes at a price with consequences for the food supply. It allows the spread of agricultural pests and impacts food crops that require sustained cold temperatures like peaches and apples.
Oh, there's that.
Trump Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt on Tuesday implemented sweeping changes to science advisory boards that make recommendations to the agency for regulations based on scientific research. He is purging from those advisory boards any scientists who receive EPA research funding, saying they have to choose between their publicly funded research or serving on the boards. In a speech on Tuesday, Pruitt characterized their service as a conflict of interest.
When we have members of those committees that have received tens of millions of dollars in grants, at the same time that they're advising this agency on rulemaking, that is not good and that's not right.
And yet, at the same time, he's putting people on those boards who definitely have conflicts of interest because they work for the fossil fuel companies that these rules are meant to regulate. One of these guys he's naming to a science advisory board has actually argued that the air right now is actually too clean because children's lungs need irritants. That's who Scott Pruitt is putting on his science advisory boards.
Exactly. Pruitt's restrictions do not apply to researchers funded by the industries that are being regulated by the EPA. Now, critics call that move a stunning blow to scientific integrity. In a statement, the head of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, scientist and former House Representative Rush Holt, said, "We question whether the EPA can continue to pursue its core mission to protect human health and the environment."
Good question.
In Texas, ExxonMobil has agreed to spend $300 million to upgrade air pollution controls on industrial flares at 8 oil and gas facilities across Texas and Louisiana as part of a settlement with the Trump administration EPA announced this week. And for violating the Clean Air Act for years, the Trump administration has fined ExxonMobil $2.5 million. That's an amount the watchdog group Public Citizen called a slap on the wrist for polluting air breathed by Gulf Coast residents. Finally, Trump administration Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke has proposed hiking entry fees at 17 of the nation's most popular parks, from $30 a vehicle to $70 a vehicle, so that visitors can pay for a $12 billion backlog of maintenance projects, even as the administration proposes cutting the Park Service's budget. Public lands experts say that raising national park fees won't raise enough revenue to pay for the maintenance and could actually harm revenue by making the parks unaffordable for most families. The Department of Interior isn't giving the public much time to weigh in. The public comment period closes on November 23rd.
Well, our national parks are our national jewels. I guess we have to keep the riffraff out of them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You don't come around here no more. You don't come around here no more. Whatever you.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, Brad and Desi neglected to mention that that whole thing, that Scott Pruitt business was predicated on biblical principles. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, just, damn it, not enough space. Oh, well, I'll do it. I was checking the Twitter feed during the break, and just a moment to share with you the by the way, I had a note from had a note coming in from Matt in San Francisco in regard to the music. There's a show tune for every occasion. That's why we gays break into song so much. That was The Trial from Pink Floyd's The Wall. There are some just wonderful lines in there. You get the idea. Get the idea that Roger Waters had issues. But there's little Easter eggs tucked in, too. Toward the end, where the guy in the far distance yells, "Shit on him!" I always loved that part. The list of credits, back when when we played music on vinyl, and you could read it in tiny, tiny print. You know, in the wall where the woman walks into Pink's room and she says,
Oh, my God. Are all these your guitars? You want to take a bath?
That's Tony Tennille of the Captain and Tennille and Muskrat, Muskrat. Yeah. Love will keep it. Yeah, right. You want to take a bath? Just wonderful. I don't know. It just seemed to work. It was either that or Waiting for the Worms. One or the other. Just a moment of... you know, these things show up in your Twitter feed, and I presume this is because this guy's in Kentucky and I'm in West Virginia. It comes from a creep, an apparent creep, named Richard Nelson of the Commonwealth Policy Center of Kentucky, Stan. Described as Commonwealth Policy Center is working for a better Kentucky by strengthening the bedrock values of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal responsibility. This would be one of those assholes who's a big fan of Sister Clark Kim Davis. And this thing showed up in my feed as a promoted tweet. Apparently those goddamn algorithms aren't good for anything except placing Russian ads. Because for some reason or another, Twitter decided I wanted to see this. And I guess it's good that they did, because, you know, I got to share it. Richard Nelson asking, and he's hustling a meeting, he's some sort of seminar or something. Can you love LGBT neighbors and keep your convictions? An important conference in Lexington on 11/6. Join us. Now, listen, Buster, if you've got LGBT neighbors and you don't at least mind your own goddamn business, there's going to be convictions of a different sort, one hopes. Well, maybe not in Kentucky. But what he's pitching is loving your LGBT neighbor without losing your convictions. Monday, November 6, 2017, 7 p.m. at the Ashland Avenue Baptist Church, 483 West Reynolds Road, Lexington, Kentucky. I don't know. What does that even mean? And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's some sort of progressive guy who's trying to argue that you can be that gay people can be. Oh, who knows? Why can't we? Why can't the Christians just mind their own business? I mean, really? Would there be a seminar on? Can you love your Jew neighbor and still maintain your convictions? Can you love your Muslim neighbor and still maintain your convictions? We all know exactly who and what they were if they did something like that. But well, it's religious liberty to hate the homosexuals, don't you understand? Yes. So 18 minutes past the hour, and we're trying to keep up with fundraising for this evening. I'm not going to. That's all I'm going to say. Oh, by the way, quick update from Scott and Punky. Found them. Missing Target coupon update. Found them. But the misplacement of them brings up this observation. For months now, I keep seeing a commercial for some over-the-counter supplement that claims to help keep your memory sharp. Oh, I know what that is. That's Prevagen. Unpaid. But, you know, you can get the same effect with Sassy Sassafras from Horn Labs. See how I just worked the product pitch right there into the middle of the... Right. Yes, I know what you're talking about. This stuff supposedly contains a substance originally found in jellyfish, a creature I'd never have connected to superior memory ability. That occurred to me, too. I haven't seen any jellyfish in Jeopardy lately. Interestingly, Scott says, as many times as I've seen this ad, I can't for the life of me recall the name of it. I guess I'm screwed, since I apparently need this stuff, but I have no idea what to ask for in the store. Don't go to the store, Scott. Just pick up your phone and call Horn Labs and ask them for a 3-month supply of Sassy Sassafras from Horn Labs, every bit as much of a bullshit nutritional supplement as that nutritional supplement that promises it will help you find your Target coupon book. Yes. Let's run over now to the phones and check in with Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd, wrong button. There you are.
There I is.
There you are.
Drink with me. That's my show tune. All right, that's it. Late Miss Mirab. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yo, you know, we're in some deep shit right now.
We are that.
You know, because the ignorant people are in the minority, and they're loud, and they're evil.
And they're exercising majority power.
It's a fucking problem. And first of all, I was playing around. I had a little time this afternoon. I caught a little bit of Dr. O'Brien's, I don't know if it was a rerun. It was like midday. But you broke in at one point and you said, Bill, you're on fire. And he was talking about what's going on with higher education, the way these different foundations like the Koch brothers and probably Heritage are trying to, well, they are. They're influencing the way people get tenure, whoever can get tenure anymore, because they're hardly giving that out. But they're influencing, you know, the programs and universities and colleges now, because in their mind,
oh yeah, what they want, Todd, is affirmative action for wingnuts. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I said to Dr. Bill, God forbid that a college chooses a black kid with the same SAT score as a white kid over the white kid. Oh, my God, that's reverse discrimination. Jesus, you will not replace us. Oh, the mud people are coming. Oh, call the Klan, right? But if a wingnut who advances theories like, well, the Negroes are never going to be as smart as the white people because God. Well, that guy needs tenure on an Ivy League faculty because he deserves it because, you know, white.
Yep. Well, they're flexing their muscles because they're you know, these people have been following this and they're pulling back money if they don't want certain, just like everybody knows that professor. I think he was from upstate New York or from the Midwest, and he had to pack his stuff up, and he was on his tenure track. They promised him tenure. He moved and everything, and then he got to the university, and they were like, no, we're not. We changed our mind because he made some controversial statements about the ridiculous Zionism going on in Israel, and that was that. You know,
game over.
But it's game over. You know, this dude had packed his shit up. You know what I'm saying? He uprooted his whole life. You know, and that's a big deal to get tenure.
Sure it is.
Yeah, I took that shit seriously because my whole family's in education. You know, either superintendents, principals, professors. And then, I did 10 years in educational research. So I get it at the university level. So I get it. And it pisses me off because these assholes, these right-wing motherfuckers, man, if they don't agree with something, it's the liberal press or they don't. It's not fact. And I like what you were saying. I heard, I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if that was a rerun or not, you know, but.
No, it wasn't. That was this week.
Okay. Yeah, it's just really, I mean, that's the one bastion. That's the one place they should not fuck around. And I believe in free speech. Like, if Yiannopoulos wants to speak at Berkeley, I think he should. Because we need to see what these assholes are about. But don't fuck with the curriculum. Don't fuck with the facts. Empiricism has gotten us, you know, pretty far. You know, dealing with facts. And if we succumb to this bullshit, then we're fucking done. And it's frightening.
Well, this idea, and you know, they're precious, and they've got delicate sensibilities, and they've got their feelings out on their sleeves, Todd. And so we can't, you know, we can't just look at them and say, you know, you're crazier in the head, and a hog is in the ass. No, we have to treat them gently and delicately, because see, they want some people in colleges to teach conservative mathematics and conservative physics and conservative algebra,
right.
and conservative geology and conservative biology, and which is just so much bullshit. There's no such thing.
A benzene ring is a benzene ring, and it will give you cancer. That's it. End of story. You know, it like you, I heard you, and I was like, oh my God, no, this makes me ill. I was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's been a slow creep. This is like the new Berger or something. You know, Bill Miller would have a field day with this. he really would have.
Oh,
yeah. I think.
Well, if he hadn't had already had a second on air stroke by, the, yeah, you get the. I mean, I'm not making light. That was a horrifying, terrifying night. But a number of people have said, "Gee, I miss Mr. Stress," and I do miss Mr. Stress. But this would have worn him down. The last 9 months would have worn him down to a nub.
A nub, man. He would have had that 38 out. He would have been ready. Remember, he used to always talk about the little 38 he would carry when he, you know, getting.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. But what, you know, what they're really saying, you know, they know as well as we do that there's no such thing as, you know, conservative calculus. There just isn't. What they object to is that when you study in the liberal art, when you study in the liberal arts, languages. English, history, that it's taught by people who are teaching students how to think, and they don't want people thinking, Todd. They want people regurgitating. They want to give them right-wing talking points and have them repeat it back to them, and basically they want to turn academia into one great goddamn big Rush Limbaugh show where the professor says, and then. Milton Friedman invented freedom via the Chicago School of Economics. Yeah. And they say, Megadiddos, Professor Fingerbutt. Milton Friedman invented freedom in the Chicago School of Economics. You get an A.
Right, exactly. And then someone questioned, where did you find that out? Oh, because I had a class, and that was, I learned that at the university. And then that's that. You know, and then we got these assholes like Murray, and I'll never forget. I was in school when that bell curve came out, and I'll never forget. I was in a class. It was abnormal psych, and the chair was teaching that class, and he made a point at the beginning of every class. He said, "Look," he said, "there's this guy out here, Charles Murray, and he is degrading this whole profession, this everything in higher education. Do not listen to him. This is junk science. This is not science. This is just nonsense."
But it's not nonsense if you're a fucking Klansman, okay? It's not.
No, it's confirmation bias, exactly. And so, you know, we all need to be awake. We have to be woke right now. We have to be sentient. We don't have time. And I'm pissed off at the goddamn, getting off on not what I want to talk about. See,
go, man, go.
The
it's
Democratic
cool.
Party, we got to get up this shit. I don't know what's up with Perez. What's his name, Perez?
I think it's pretty clear at this point in time that the DNC is and has been a big damn mess. That wasn't exactly a newsflash. But what I love is the Bruga, Bruga, Bruga. And you know, once again, we're going to have another little orgiastic round of scab peeling by the Hilarians and the Burners. Going after each other. Yeah, Hillary stole the Democratic nomination, goddamn!
Yeah, that's all distractions. Fuck that. Yes, it's true. Probably it is true. But you know what? Fuck that. We have to move beyond that because right now we need to be grooming somebody. We need to groom at least four people who are viable. Because we can't put up with this shit. It's not just the United States.
Bernie,
bring down the whole Western world.
Bernie's going to live forever. Bernie's going to save us in 2020.
Look, I don't see anybody. I see no one.
I see a few. I mean, there are a few who are positioning themselves. I'm not particularly keen on the idea of either Bernie or Joe Biden. I like them both. But you know, here's that thing, and I know it just pisses the purity patrol right off. I have never found a perfect candidate, and
there's no such thing.
And while, you know, while Hillary Clinton was by far from the perfect candidate until 2016, you know, I didn't go and vote for her reluctantly here in West Virginia, Todd. I voted for her eagerly. And with excitement. I didn't go with my head down. Oh, I'm going to have to go vote for Hillary. Because I knew what was on the other fucking side.
Bob, you passed the one question IQ test that you often speak of. That's why. You know, I was ready to vote for Jill Stein until she couldn't figure out which fucking plane to get on. You know, that was that for that. Shit. I like to do bong hits too, but not while I'm fucking campaigning.
Well, you know, I mean, she had a tough day that day. She'd been sitting near some Wi-Fi, and it probably ate on her brain some, and then, well, you know. but no, I mean, it, look, the story, the big thing is this, and I'm glad you're on the line because we can discuss it together, so it doesn't sound like I'm just all, you know, me. I read the article from Politico today, with the excerpt from Donna Brazile's book, and
and
like I said, it's going to. I can't wait. You know, my Twitter feed is, my timeline's already going nuts. And there's the burners. She done stole it from Bernie because Bernie was a gonna win. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. He was not gonna win. She rigged it. Well, no, she rigged the money. If you pay attention to what Donna Brazile said, she said that Barack Obama had pretty much ignored the DNC and not fully funded it. So her people came up with this scheme whereby she would pay off the DNC's debts and in return would basically get control of all the DNC's money. You know what that's called, Todd? And I'm not talking down. I mean, we're buddies. But you know what that's called?
Right.
Now, she had built this machine. She had built this machine to become, in hopes of becoming president. You know what she did with the DNC's called? Machine politics.
Yeah. Well. Excuse me. Yeah. It. Right. Exactly.
Machines.
Well,
when you build a machine, the machine does what you built the machine to do.
Right.
And let's be clear about something.
Top down. Everything else.
Yeah.
She was a bulldozer.
If you build a bulldozer. Do not expect it to do fine needlework in a quilting factory.
That's a good analogy.
And I know what's going to be out there, but I want to clear something up real quick. Not a goddamn thing she did was illegal. May have been unethical. Probably was. Sketchy, skeevy,
right.
Money grubbing. You damn right. And there's one aspect of the story that pisses me off more than anything else. And that is when Donna Brazile gets around, and of course there's this element of people, Donna Brazile, goddamn, she gave the questions to Hillary.
Right.
Like Hillary couldn't see those questions coming. But when she mentioned that so the money went to the states and then the states had to give the money to the DNC. It wasn't money laundering so much as it was money filtering. The battleground states got to keep their money, Todd, but the other states with poor little, you know, with poor little hat in the hand Democratic parties, they had to send all of their money to the DNC, which was then run by Hillary Clinton. And the states that weren't battleground states got to keep something on the order of one half of 1% of the monies that came into the state organizations. Man, wouldn't it be nice if the state of Alabama, maybe they weren't even in the compact, they're so ineffectual, but wouldn't it be nice if, say, the state of Alabama had that kind of money to throw into this Senate race we've been talking about coming up on December 12th? Wouldn't that be something? They might actually be... They might actually really...
Don Johnson could use that, couldn't he? Don Johnson could use that, couldn't he?
Who?
What's his name, Johnson?
No, Johnson? Doug Jones. Doug Jones.
Doug Jones, I mean.
Yeah,
he
could damn sure use it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this supports my idea that Hillary, Bernie, and Barack Obama all need to get their asses down there to Alabama and campaign. Because, okay, you may not be a Hillary fan. Maybe you're a Bernie fan. Okay, you're not a Bernie fan. Maybe you get all excited about Barack Obama. Somebody going to get you out to the polls.
Right. Well,
I'm sorry.
I think what gets lost in this...
I filibustered all over you. That's my bad.
No, listen. No, you're much more knowledgeable than I, and I'm glad to be around still. I'm glad to be walking on 2 feet. But listen, people forget, or maybe they, you know, you see, these political parties are private clubs. They make their own rules.
Sure they are.
And the more, right, and you people got to get that through their heads. See, they make their own rules. It's a private club. And, you know, that's why we're dealing with this asshole now, because they could have fashioned rules that would have prevented this fascist, mentally ill fascist from being in office on their side, you know, but they didn't do that because they, for whatever reason, they didn't do it. But yeah, these are private clubs. It's all about money. And so, you know, that's why we have to, you know, before I was talking about IPA, infiltrate, propagate, and assume control. Because it's only going to be two parties. It's a third-party thing. It's okay until – it might be okay on a local level, but not on a federal level, no. That's why you got to get people together and assume control, because this shit is not working. And look at this shit we're dealing with now. But earlier today with Dr. O'Brien, that was poignant. That was really – and see, this is the problem, is that we're dealing with ignorance. And these motherfuckers are loud and ignorant and in a minority, you know. And we have to squelch that. They need to be let put on notice that they need to back the fuck up and shut the fuck up. You know, it's not my fault they're ignorant, and nobody likes to be told they're ignorant. And it doesn't necessarily have negative connotations. The real, you know, if you look at the real definition of ignorance, you're a word knower. I mean. It just means you know you're not well informed.
You are lacking in knowledge. You are lacking in understanding and comprehension. It does not mean the same as stupid.
Exactly. But if you call someone ignorant, that's like calling them a pejorative, a racial pejorative term or something. You know. This is a mess. But so, yeah, that was a really – I got to listen to that because I was just catching bits and pieces of it. But, you know, like I said, I take that seriously only because that's the cultural capital that I was brought up with. That's the cultural capital I bring to the table of my life, you know what I mean? And I know what that's about. I know how hard it is to get tenure and stuff like that and played all those politics games. And, you know, it's a real mess, man. And see, these people are in cities. They played a long game. You know, we fuck around and we go to sleep. In between elections, we go to sleep. And like Donna Brazile was saying, she was like, oh, my God, the burner money, you know, how much does it take, you know, every month to keep this thing going? And it was some astronomical amount. You know, it was mismanaged. But so, yeah, I just wanted to get that out there, because if folks, you know, who like to listen to or would like a lecture. And lecture is not a negative thing, because people pay a lot of money to get lectured to. It's called going to a university class. That's what a lecture is, and you take notes. And that's why people should support the horn, because, you know, there are a lot of attributes. You can learn a lot, dig a little bit, and listen. You know, you have some really good callers, and of course yourself.
Well, you're one of them, Todd. You're one of them, without a doubt. Yeah, see, I'm just watching the feed here, and lo and behold, there it is. I didn't want to believe Donna Brazile's new book is a grift. Then I saw she's planning to hawk it on a Selfridge Truthers radio show. Now this was a retweet from one of the fire breathing hilarians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now now they're gonna the fire breathing hilarians. We'll scream everything except the magic word at Donna Brazile, and then the fire breathing burners will scream everything but the magic word at the fire breathing hilarians. And you know what happens in the meantime, Todd?
Mm-hmm.
We don't unify.
We're wasting time.
We fuck ourselves in 2018. We fuck ourselves in 2020. And we just keep fucking ourselves because fucking ourselves feels so good. I haven't changed an iota. My values remain the same. I want single payer health care for every American. I want universal basic income for every American. I want Social Security that isn't just shored up, but I want the Social Security retirement age lowered to 55, because I'll be 55 in January. See what I did there? I want real liberal policies in this country. I want a government that spends money on its people and not its corporations. My progressive values have not changed a dime, okay? But I'm at a point with the hardcores on either side who are too busy picking at each other's goddamn scabs to focus on the enemy who is in our face, and I use the word enemy deliberately because Donald Trump is an enemy of the Constitution. The people who support him are enemies of self-government and the Constitution, and I don't blanch from saying it. And we got people who are more interested in picking at each other than they do stopping the absolute destruction of self-government in this country. And all I can do is cry out a pox on both your houses.
Well, you're telling the truth. Exactly. You are telling the truth. We do not have time to fuck around right now. This is just like it wasn't time. We didn't have time last time. We did not. She was a terrible candidate, and I'm going to segue into the little story.
She's a terrible candidate who beat Donald Trump by 3 million votes.
And the only reason I could see he was going to win, but the only
she's a terrible candidate. She's a terrible candidate who got screwed over by white women in this country.
Yep. Can you imagine? And. I mean, after you go to the black churches and you see the black ladies with the hat, oh, Hillary, oh, no, touch me, oh, kiss me, oh, you know, after that, what she ain't had to
see,
say.
You can do that. I can't do that.
I know I can. That's why I'm doing it for you. I know you want, I mean, I don't know if you want to or not. Yeah, I can get away with that. I'm not doing the show. I'm just a bystander. You know, but that's the thing. And then when she said, it was a step. She kept going, falling down steps. One of the steps she fell down was when in that interview she said, "Well, I never knowingly lied." Don't ever say that.
Look, I mean, it lives in infamy. There's a whole chapter in her book about the verbal gaffe she made in that town hall in Ohio, which was close enough to Appalachia to be close enough, where she said, "Well, we're going to be putting a lot of coal miners out of work." And she didn't mean, yeah, I hate them goddamn coal miners and I can't wait to see them starving to death. But that's the way it got played around here. And you know what? All you had to do to not get that played like that around here was not fucking say it.
Yeah. I don't know if she was freelancing. Well, I can understand what she meant to say.
I know exactly what she was trying to say, Todd. Here, let me try just on the fly, and I'm not near as smart as she is or anything, because, you know, after all, remember, she's the smartest human being ever to run for president in the whole history of the universe today, tomorrow, forever, amen. How about you answer that question by saying, look, the demand for coal is declining.
Mm-hmm.
Appalachia has been mistreated for 150 years. It's about time we did right by Appalachia and started making it possible for people in Appalachia to have better jobs, jobs that don't kill them, jobs that don't poison them, jobs that don't get them incinerated past being recognizable as human beings. But instead, she offers up that we're going to put a lot of them out of work, and then along the way starts talking about Appalachian people as those people. I mean, it was that comment was a twofer. And then there was you know, I know how to deal with men who go off the off the reservation or off the plantation. There was that.
It might have been both. Yeah. Yeah, she didn't have the nuance to spin, you know, and that was a perfect opportunity for her to say, we need to present West Virginia with cutting edge jobs for the the new millennium.
I mean, I know what, you know, look, I know the reality of what a former mountaintop removal site is. It's a toxic hellscape. Nothing grows on it but non-native grasses. There's no water table. And among other things, as we've found, for instance, by the high school that they built in McDowell County up on top of a toxic waste site, it gets hot. You know, on an Appalachian mountaintop in the hottest of summer, there's always some respite to be found. There's always a little bit of breeze blowing through the trees. There's always a little bit of cooling shade. There's a babbling.
That's because you got trees and grass.
There's a babbling brook that you can dip your hand in and splash your face and cool down. All of that goes away on a mountaintop removal site because there ain't no grass and there ain't no trees and there ain't no stream. But you know what you don't have to have on a mountain? Breeze, trees, shade. You know what you don't have to have on a mountaintop removal site? What you can put up there that doesn't need any of that? How about a solar farm?
What?
How about a solar farm?
Damn right.
You can't put wind turbines up there. We found that out the hard way because it's also unstable that the giant poles that they stand on sink and shift and can't be made stable. But but a solar farm? You know, not even one, okay? Why can't we have one just to see if it helps? There's lots more. There's lots more toxic waste site where that high school in McDowell County is. It's the one where Bernie was. And it would have been wonderful if he would have said, hey, I saw where we came in here. This used to be a mountaintop removal site. Why isn't there a giant solar farm next to it?
That's what I was about to say. But that's your Buddy Bill Manchin's job. To say, okay, this is what you want to do. All right, here's a concession. You want to do something we know is terribly destructive to the environment and going to cause harm because all this shit goes downstream into our streams, blah, blah, blah. So when you're done fucking the mountain up, you will be mandated to, however, by hook or crook, you will install a solar farm on this site. Because you wanted energy from here, you're going to get it. We're going to get energy out of here, but it won't be that fucking dirty shit. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's just a couple of crummy ass senators, and they are crummy senators. Where's the entrepreneurial capital? I mean, I know this is going to sound nuts. Maybe I'm asking for hillbilly welfare, but a man as rich as Elon Musk, and he's got his own labor problems right now, God knows. But a man like Elon Musk, talk to one of these, because see, all these mountaintop removal sites, they're not owned by coal companies, Todd. They're owned by land companies that lease the land to the coal company to take the coal out of the land. And then it reverts back to the land company after it's so-called reclaimed.
Oh, they lease it? Okay, yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
So the land company still owe the land. Why not have Elon Musk get a hold of one of these land companies, like Roland Land Company, that owns just gajillions of acres in southern West Virginia, and put some hillbillies to work building and maintaining a 5,000-acre solar farm whose power can be sent around the... I mean, this, like I said, we are within 8 hours of 20 or 30, 40, 50, 60 million people here.
Right. Like a new TVA, a new wave TVA.
Well, a Marshall Plan for Appalachia. Why can't Eastern Kentucky have that?
Well, they ought to do that, and people ought to be allowed to grow weed legally. But that's, man, Tennessee, Kentucky, southern West Virginia, that's like the East Coast Green Triangle. That's like the Mendocino County of the East, you know. But I'm not going to dwell on that.
James with an email says, solar farm? What about when the sun goes down? Oh, I know. That's what proves that solar won't work. I'll tell that story now real quick about when Ferg was getting his golden horseshoe knighthood, and his mama and I were sitting proudly in the audience there, and Joe Manchin delivered a speech about how Well, wind and solar may be the energy of the future, but right now America needs coal. Apparently America didn't need the coal so bad because a whole shit ton of it wound up getting on a boat and going to China.
Well, it's a big, you know, and like I agree with what you're saying. I've been thinking about that a lot because in a lot of ways, inner city, especially in the Rust Belt, like Northeast and across the Midwest, they're like Appalachia in a way because factories used to be, you know, factories used to be vertical in cities. You know, people walk 2 blocks to the factory to go to work and go back to their row house, like in Philly and other cities and things like that. And maybe we need smaller craft industry, you know, because West Virginia, you know, southern West Virginia is isolated. You only have so many roads in and out, this and that, you know, but it's not the kind of land that was ever
meant to be heavily populated.
No,
I mean, the only way you'd ever heavily populate southern West Virginia is if you had an industry like, well, okay, there are other places where we populate that we don't have any business populating, okay. And once in a while, the mudslides will come to Southern California, and you'll see some 15 million homes go sliding down the hill because they were perched on the side of a hill that was never meant to have a goddamn house on it. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that happens. And we've got houses perched on hillsides here. But it's not organic, if that's the word. It's not normal. There's a future out there, and this is going to sound really hippie, really, really hippy-dippy granola, but when you talk about the internet connectivity and stuff, and everybody who listens to this program knows how much fun I have being a customer of Frontier Communications.
Frontier!
Frontier sucks. And as Sparky points out, molten salt solar power furnaces run 24 hours a day with a steam turbine. That's a beautiful idea. I love those things. I bet you they'd even work in West Virginia if somebody would come and build one. But we don't have an economic development authority that's running around trying to find coal companies to come to West Virginia and gas frackers because that's enough of an economy for us. They're not going out and they're not knocking on Elon Musk's door because coal still exercises an outsized amount of influence compared to what its economic force actually is, and you know they don't want the new stuff, they like the old stuff, thank you. And what's it to them if they incinerate a couple of dozen miners here and there? That's the cost of doing business, baby. All right?
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, it's so past that. That's the thing. It's so. I mean, even China has gotten wise. They were very pragmatic in the way they're moving forward with their energy. You know, smog hit. They're like, nah, they're going to be ahead of us. They're so soon, but they already are in a way. But you know what I mean in terms of using renewable energy. You know, they think forward. But so I had an interaction today with I don't know if I told you about the guy. It's been a while, but before the election, it's been like maybe a year and a half. I've been talking with this older guy up at the convenience store right up the street from me. And, you know, I've been feeling him out for months and months. So we started talking politics a little bit. And he expressed to me exactly what a lot of folks were saying, why they were going to vote for Trump, because they're conservative and they want a conservative Supreme Court justice. And that's their business. That's what you want. Okay, fine. I don't agree with it, but that's what they want. Okay, fine. And I was like, okay. I said, oh, so your guy won. How you feeling now? I said it to him today. And he was like, oh, great. He said, I wish all this Russia stuff would go away. I'm like, yeah, but it's not going away. I was like, yeah, his whole administration is going down in disgrace. I said, don't you read? I said, he's nervous. I said, Manafort has pled guilty. And by the way, I believe that Manafort's also been wearing wires. Because when somebody picks your fucking door in Alexandria, that makes one a little bit nervous. I think they're all wearing wires, including Jeff Sessions. But I want to touch on that in a minute.
Okay.
But anyway, he was like, yeah, but we got I got my justice. I'm like, yeah, And he's like, I don't like Big Grubby. He started to get very animated. His eyes bucked up.
Oh, they always do.
And he started spewing these Fox and Trump talking points. I mean, it was like a little. I was talking to a robot. I was like, yeah, but let's look at the facts. I said, why does everyone keep lying about Russia? If there's nothing there, why does everybody keep lying about it? I said, even the attorney general, our chief law enforcement officer. If you like, I'm a trained interviewer. I mean, I saw that shit from the fucking jump. But why do you keep lying? Why are you answering a question that nobody asked you? That's when Al Franken hit him over the head with a goddamn bat the first time, you know. And he started answering, Sessions started to answer a question which was not asked of him, where he basically told himself and Franken seized upon it. And that was this past summer, I believe. So now we see that Sessions, not only did he perjure himself verbally, but three or four times in writing because he didn't fill his forms out properly. Now, and like you said, he keeps changing his story. And then this most recent encounter, I don't know if you caught this, but he deferred to Mueller. Mueller was around. He said, well, am I being interviewed? Somebody asked him and said, well, are you being interviewed by, you know, this investigation? And he said, well, I don't know. And he looked at him and said, and he was like off his game, he was off his square, man. I mean, he didn't know what to do. And that's what told me. I said, okay, why would you even say it like that? You just gave yourself away again. I think he's a mental lightweight. I think he's going a little senile. I'm not impressed with his intellect at all. Period.
No.
He's a fucking dumbass. So that's why I say I think he's been wearing a wire, too, because you can look in his face. That's like the dream job he's always wanted.
Well, okay. I'm not. There's a possibility, maybe. I think it highly unlikely. Mm-hmm. I personally think it highly unlikely. I think that look you're seeing on his face, and if Billable Rick was handy, he's probably off listening to Norman Goldman, though. But if Billable Rick was handy, he might chime in and agree with me on this. That's the look of a man who's received a target letter.
That's why he asked if I'm being interviewed or not.
Because, you know, the feds will do that. They'll send you, you know, you're the target of a federal grand jury investigation.
And you're not allowed to talk about it.
And, well, I mean, you can or you can't. I mean, whatevs. But the thing is, when you get one, because, see, you gotta take into account the way the federal prosecutorial rules work. Mm-hmm. If you're a federal prosecutor, and up to and including Bob Mueller, okay, a little bit of procedural. In order to get a grand jury to give you what's called a true bill, that is to indict someone,
mm-hmm.
all you have to do is present enough evidence to the grand jury to convince them that a crime has been committed. Well, no, let me back up. You've got to convince them that it is more likely than not, which is 50% plus infinity one, you know. Just a little
just
bit
more. Scale. Okay.
Just make the scale move the tiniest little bit. It is more likely than not that a crime has been committed, and B, it is more likely than not that the guy that the prosecutor says committed to the crime is the guy who committed the crime. That's all it takes to get an indictment. And we must remember that that is a long damn way from the proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard that will obtain at the jury trial of the person if that person is indicted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the federal rules of prosecutorial conduct say that if you're going to indict somebody in federal court, that just being able to cross that 50% plus 00001 standard ain't enough. You've got to be able to indict the person and have a substantial likelihood of prevailing at trial.
Damn.
So.
Oh, that's bunk.
So understand that with Manafort and Gates, by bringing the indictment, Mueller is saying he thinks he has a substantial likelihood of prevailing at trial. That means that would, you know, if he was talking to a bookie, he'd say, "Yeah, I'd say I got about 2-3 to 1 odds."
Right. Put the money on me if you're smart.
Yeah, the smart money's on me. And so, and obviously, you know, Papadopoulos has already pled guilty.
And, oh, that's the wire boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that is part of all of this. And so if you get a target letter, that means that they're considering indicting your happy ass. And you know that if they indict your happy ass, they've got the goods.
So that's why he had that look, that affect.
That is why these days when you see United States Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, he looks like a dog trying to shit a peach pit.
Mm-hmm. And he sure does, too. He's disgraceful.
They've got the goods. And there's irony out the gazoo in that, because Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was a U.S. attorney for the Southern. I mean, no, he wasn't an assistant or anything. He was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Alabama. He was also the attorney general for the entire state of Alabama. He knows these things.
He has to know a little bit of something.
And
like that. Okay.
You can't convince me that there's not just a little bit of good old-fashioned Greek tragedy hubris involved in all of this. You know, in a Greek tragedy, the guy who the tragedy is about doesn't necessarily have to be a good, likable guy. Go read Oedipus. There's nothing particularly endearing about Oedipus. He's just a king, that's all. But he didn't understand why everything was going to shit around him until he found out that he'd been banging on Mama. But he wasn't a particularly nice guy. You know, Hamlet proves himself to be an asshole 2 or 3 times over. But you still, at the end, you look at it and you go, well, this didn't have to happen. This is awful. I feel better now because it didn't happen to me. That's the way theater works.
Mm-hmm.
Othello, you know, Othello, King Lear, doddering old fool, does the stupidest damn thing a man could do with his estate and splits it between 3 people who then, and then tells them about it. Doesn't wait till after he's kicked off for them to learn, and sets off, and everything goes to shit around him. They all bring it on themselves to one degree or another, and that's the case with Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. He has brought this on himself. He could have sat there in the Senate of the United States, Todd, and piled up tenure and been the junior senator from Alabama till Richard Shelby kicked off, and had great weight and authority. He was well on his way. And all he ever really did was draw his breath and his pay. Every now and then he'd stand up and say something stupid just to remind the folks back home that he was still there. But he had a nice life. But all of a sudden, he wanted more. He wanted more, and
because he became like Icarus. He became like Icarus. He tried to get too close to the sun.
Yeah. And the sun was orange, and now the wax is melting, and he's falling.
Right. So
now, we haven't gotten to the part. Gotten to the part where his wife kills herself, and he goes off stage and gouges out his eyes with her toga brooch or anything, and wanders the land forevermore, unloved and despised. But we can hope.
Stay tuned next week. If it wasn't us, this would really be exciting. We can't write shit like this. And yes, I follow C-SPAN, and like we were talking about earlier, about facts. See, these weird right wingers, when they hear or see something they don't like, and I guess it's because of confirmation bias or whatever reason, they're just clouded in the brain. They're calling in to C-SPAN, saying that they're leaning left because they just don't like what they hear. You know, they don't like what they hear. I'm sorry. The facts are the facts. You know, it's not my fault you raped that little girl who's three, and now you you got caught. Not my fucking problem. It happened. You know, it's too late to feel bad about it. You already did it. You know, these people have been just operating like.
Yeah,
like Mnuchin, you know, Mnuchin is a goddamn worm. Look at that motherfucker. He looks evil. That motherfucker is a goddamn reptile. Have you looked at him closely?
Yeah, there's a Mnuchin stuck in the swamp drain. You mentioned talking to your neighbor there a minute ago, though, Todd. I wanted to put this out there for your consideration and the rest of the family community congregation. I had a similar experience today. I finally was able to go and get the new bearings put on the vehicle and got new rear brakes.
Oh, good news! Okay,
yeah, new rear brakes too. Okay. I'm so excited now. All I got to do is do the rotors and I'm good.
Might need those in a hilly.
Brakes are nice. Brakes are nice. I was trying a new garage. Because this guy came very highly recommended. And as far as I can tell, the recommendation was valid. And I'm not making fun here. That it was so West Virginia. I sat there at a card table with his wife. And
a card table?
Yeah, and just one of them little folding tables like the church has, you know.
Yeah.
And sat there while he went about the business of fixing me up, and he'd call me along the way and say, "Yeah, these bearings are gone to hell. Look at this, real straight up," and you could see, yeah, right. them bearings have gone to hell. And he was up under the innards of my car.
Oh.
And from underneath there, he said, "Now I don't know how you feel about him." And I thought, man, it's been going so good so far. Do not, Bob, don't be an asshole. Don't be an asshole, Bob. And so I committed to not being an asshole. Because I knew what was coming, and it did. I don't know how you feel about him, but I wish they'd just let Trump get on with his business and try to be president, and maybe he could get something done.
Right. Give him a chance.
Yep. And I said, well, okay, I said, well, I'm not entirely there with you. I said, bear in mind, I didn't have, and you tell the truth. I said, now bear in mind, I did not have a Hillary sign in my yard. He said, neither did I. I said, but daggummit, I said, would I have come to you if I hadn't been told that you were a damn good mechanic? He said, I said, would I have come to you if somebody said, well, he's a really good reality TV star, but he can fix your car? And he laughed and said, no, you wouldn't. I said, well, then why do we think that a reality TV star whose only purpose in life has been to talk about himself and make people look at him is overnight going to turn into a great politician and a great president? And he wheeled that creeper out from under the car, and he looked at me for a minute, and I thought, well, I've done it. And he said, by God, I never thought of it that way.
Oh.
And then he looked at me, and he said, it ain't all anybody else's fault. He needs to put down that goddamn phone and quit that damn tweeting and get on with what we're paying him for.
Okay, good. Common ground.
And
good,
I thought, damn, we're making progress.
Right.
And so it didn't devolve into a shouting match or anything. And I'd have been hard pressed if it had, because, you know, car was up and didn't have no wheels on it at the moment.
You were gambling, man. I don't know if I would have done that.
but you know, but I mean, I tried to. It ain't in me to just sit there and go, yeah, I tell you what, you make America great again. Because my ears and eyeballs and other orifice would have just started spontaneously bleeding if I'd done that. That's why I'm not. That's why I'm not doing right wing radio, Todd. I could be a bajillionaire if I was over there just lying my ass off, and there'd be some right wing nut welfare foundation just burying me in money every blessed day. And at night, I'd go into the bedroom and look at Agnes and go, "I want to kill myself." So instead, you know, we every night, and I sit here and I say it's 8:10, and we're stuck on $195 to go, and somehow or another we managed to keep the program on. But I couldn't, you know, I couldn't sit there with him and say, you know, we're going to make America great again. Instead, you know, we were a couple of hillbillies being neighborly and talking to each other. And he didn't say anything about economic anxiety or anything. We talked on, and I found out that, you know, lo and behold, he's not waiting for coal to make West Virginia great again or anything. He ain't got no love for the coal industry.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, you know what? Here's a fella that if somebody was to work with him and talk to him, be neighborly like, right, could be an ally. Now. You're never going to bring him over on the wonders and beauties of socialism, and you're not going to reach, you might outright lose him on a woman's right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to fight and chance just being a neighbor.
Well. You know, we have a good conversation, me and this guy, because he's about, I would assume he's probably 63. He's retired military. He went into that today. And we always have a civil, and we made a bet today. We always have a civil conversation, but I bet him a dollar. I said, I'm sorry, but that administration's going down. It's great. And I don't know if he saw the news today or not, but I was explaining to him, well, you know, the attorney general has perjured himself a number of times, and he's about to either come clean or perjure himself some more. And I said, the president lies every day. And he was like, no, he doesn't. I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, I was just trying to explain some things to him or present, you know, what I believe are, what I see to be our facts, you know, commonly real facts. But, you know, he just kept, his eyes got big, and I thought he was smelling burnt toast, and I was about to call 911 because I thought he was going to have a stroke. But, and I finally told him, I said, well, you know, he's the great white hope to a lot of people. And I understand that. And people are hurting, and I understand that. But this is not the guy. I said, you know, and then he kept talking about this. And he was, you know what? What prompted me to really go into him is when he started talking about cities. He's like, well, I don't like my tax money going this and there, blah, blah, blah. And Detroit and Philadelphia, and once he said Philadelphia, I was like, oh, no, I'm not taking this shit.
Well, we all know what Detroit and Philadelphia really mean now, don't we?
Yeah. And then I was like, okay. I was right, exactly. And come on, that's my hometown, man. Come on, I'm not taking that bullshit. I was like, okay.
I mean, we understand that in his world, there are no white people at all that live in Detroit or Philadelphia, or God knows, St. Louis, and New York's all Jews, And Chicago, right. It ain't nothing but just, you know, wall-to-wall black people with machine guns in Chicago. That's all it is.
Well, he made it very clear. He could not tolerate any. He said, I'll visit for a minute, but I can't wait to get the hell up out of there. And I was like, well, I said, and I didn't say to him, I know why you're saying that. I didn't want to get that deep into it like that. But I did say, well, I said, but you understand that the South and the Midwest and other parts of the country, they take more from the federal government than they give. And he was citing me all these stats about why that's not true. And I was like, no, but I said, I disagree, but, you know, really, I mean, you're wrong. And then I said, I brought it back to our initial encounter, you know, this is like a year and a half ago, about he wanted the Supreme Court justice. I said, okay. I said, you wanted Gorsuch so bad. I said, you know, his first decision, he ruled against a man freezing to death in his rig, an OTR rig, over the you know, over the road trucker rig, freezing to death. And I explained to him the circumstances, blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah. So Gorsuch was like, no, you should have stayed there and frozen to death in the truck. He was like, well, I don't know anything about that. And at that point, I wanted to say, well, you're fucking ignorant.
Well, you know, right, and but see, that's always their fault. Well, I don't, if they know that in their heart of hearts that they should agree, but if they agree with you, they've lost it. I don't know nothing about that. In other words, you probably lying to me because you're a liberal, son. Yeah.
I offered to sell him.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's just some liberal website.
Exactly. That's where I saw that was going. Yeah. So I was like, okay. Well,
okay.
Make a bet.
So I want to share something. You mentioned court cases and everything. I want to share something with you.
Yeah.
I ran across, because you know we have these conversations, and part of the conversation is that we talk about stuff. You know, stuff that you've heard about or I've heard about. I ran across this one, and you know how you were talking about the little church ladies and how they talk and everything, and I said I can't do that, you know, because I'm all white and everything. Well, a few nights ago, I engaged in a digression on the word, on the usage of the word bro, which of course comes out of, which, you know, comes, I mean, was I right? It comes out of the patois of African American slang, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, there are other words, and I don't hear them so much from black folks because we don't have so much black folks around here, but anything that black folks come up with, white folks will appropriate sooner or later, whether it's pants or rock and roll music or street slang.
Ask Elvis Presley. Okay.
Yeah. And they say, oh, man, they said the second line for Fats Domino was something to be beheld in New Orleans, by the way. Oh, I bet that was a send-off. So this story comes out of New Orleans, and it comes out of the court system of New Orleans, because the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana sits in New Orleans, right there in the quarter. Walked right past it while we were down there, and I thought, my God, more injustice has come out of it. If there was any universal justice, that pile of, what in the hell is that, Todd? But I said, if there's any justice, this thing would just come tumbling down for all the evil that's come out of it. And evil is still coming out of it. The story, and you know, I've mentioned there's that thing they teach you on the first day of law school. They've got all these hoary, H-O-A-R-Y, old maxims and aphorisms that they teach you. And one of the first ones they teach is that hard cases make bad law. In other words, if the injustice is obvious, and it's obvious that the guy doesn't need to have this done to him, and isn't, you know, a walking human piece of shit and everything, then it's easier to come to the right conclusion. Hard cases make bad law. Cases where the guy, you know, wasn't without sin, okay? And they still screw up, and then you know what the obvious answer is, but you can't get to it because you want to make sure that the dirty bastard gets what's coming to him, right?
Right.
Well, this guy was from Harvey, Louisiana, and his name is Warren Demem, D-E-M-E-S-M-E, and he's waiting on trial still in Orleans Parish. He's charged with first-degree rape and indecent behavior with a juvenile under the age of 13.
Mm.
He's 24 years old. He's an African-American man. He was busted back in October of 2015 when it was complained that he had sexually assaulted two juvenile victims. And one of them was a rape of a preteen girl.
Mm.
Hard case, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Not really.
But, you know, once again, young black man charged with rape, you know, and it's in Louisiana, so all the little flags go up. Who knows who done it?
Right.
So what they did is the cops took him in and interviewed him, and you know, you have a right to counsel. It's constitutional under
under Gideon versus Wainwright, I think, if I still recall my legal training. You got a right to counsel. And if you say, if the cops are questioning you and you say, I want a lawyer, the cops have to stop. And you get a lawyer.
You get arrested. That's it. I want my lawyer. That's all you got to say. You don't have to say shit. You, first of all, don't talk to the goddamn cops. Number one, I've been arrested many times. I told you I had 13 felonies on me. They wanted me. I would have been dead maybe, I don't know, 10 times over. You know, anyway. But yeah, don't say shit. I'm going to say I want my lawyer. And don't sign anything. Because they're going to want you. They're going to fuck with you. Wake you up in the middle of the night and want you to sign something. Don't fuck with them. Don't say shit. Don't fuck with them. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm just
so,
word for wise. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. So here's what happens. The cops take him in. According to the story from NOLA.com, New Orleans Times Picayune, he voluntarily agreed to two interviews with police regarding the charges with the minors. Mm-hmm. And they recorded both of the interviews. And in both of the interviews, he very clearly said, I understand my rights, and then he waived his rights and proceeded with the interview.
Mm.
So that's mistake. Yeah, that's a mistake. That's a huge mistake. But in the second interview, and this is where the trouble starts. In the second interview, he said, and this is where language comes in, and I'm gonna use a dialect. And I mean no insult by this.
Go ahead, Bob. You were no were you.
The way the New Orleans Times Picayune describes it, the ambiguity, Crichton wrote, was contained within DeMem's tortured syntax as he told police. Okay, it's tortured syntax. It's not the language of the street. My God, we went down to New Orleans, and one of the first things Agnes says to me, you know, because we're hillbillies out of the hills, and the language in New Orleans is a whole nother thing. Okay, you can get some old New Orleans types, and you'll swear they're from Jersey. They don't even sound Southern. Okay. And there's a reason for that.
No.
And then there's the people of French Canadian descent, and then there's just plain old Southern accent, okay? And it all gets mixed into this funky gumbo down there that's beautiful to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's how he said, "I want a lawyer." If y'all think I did it, I know I didn't do it, so why don't you just give me a lawyer, dog, because this is not what's up.
That makes sense. I understand that.
You understand every fucking word of what he just said, right?
Yeah. That's just straight talk for like,
Okay. So, did he say he wanted a lawyer, Todd?
Yes.
The Supreme Court, by a 6-1 decision, the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana said he did not clearly articulate a desire to be represented by counsel.
Oh, that's bullshit. Fuck
that they didn't that the cops could not. Now these are cops who worked the mean streets of Harvey, Louisiana, right?
They're supposed to know.
I mean, they hear this every day. And God knows, I've heard lots of little white kids around here refer to each other now as dog. I don't get it. I don't get it, but I understand it. Maybe.
Look, the white boys wear do-rags. The white boys wear do-rags, man. Come on.
I do while I'm weed eating, man. Dog. I do while I'm weed eating, dog. and I got to think about it. I guess, you know, because what I hear is I hear guys referring to guys as dog and guys referring to women as bitch.
Yeah.
So maybe
in a nice way.
So you know, because you know, what do you refer to a sexually active male dog? What, a stud? Yeah, I just can't say, what's up, stud? Actually, I did hear that. Oh, yeah. You're a football
you
practice.
Did?
Football practice. Oh, hell, growing up in the South. Man, you're a stud. And, you know,
oh,
that's,
that way.
Yeah, but, so he says, if y'all, this is how I feel, if y'all think I did it, I know that I didn't do it, so why don't you just give me a lawyer, dog, because this is not what's up. And the Supreme Court of the state of Louisiana said, the police had no way of knowing what he was asking for by wanting
that's
a
bullshit.
By wanting
no,
a by,
fuck that.
No one knows what he meant when he said he wanted a lawyer dog. We don't know what a lawyer dog is. We've never heard of a lawyer.
No, there's a comma there. There's a fucking comma. God damn it.
You no, because we got to be constitutional originalists, and there's no comma in the transcript. And so we've never heard of a lawyer dog before. We don't speak Negro.
See, it all comes down to a fucking comma.
And the use of dog. And you know, come on, you know these cops have heard the people referring to each other, white and black alike, as dog for, my God.
Decades, man. Come on. That's old,
what
man.
Would,
that's like Snoop Dogg.
What would the Supreme Court of Louisiana think of Snoop Dogg? Now, we have never heard of a Snoop Dogg. Of course, we once read that lovely comic strip with that little beagle in it called Snoopy, and he was a dog. Is he saying he is Snoopy the dog?
They're not that square, man. That's bullshit.
How square? Yes, they are. Yes, they are. State versus DeMim. And the man is going to face trial now, and he's going to do life if he's convicted with a confession they say that he voluntarily gave after he said he wanted a lawyer, dog.
Man, I hope somebody can pick his case off if it's not too late.
It's too late.
Anybody can see
it's
that.
Too late.
He's going
to trial. And after he's been tried, they are going to ship his black ass to Angola forever.
Oh, man. That's fucked up. They got the worst in Angola and Parchment, Mississippi, I guess. Man, that is so obvious.
Only one justice of that 7-member court dissented.
That is so sad. Like you said, and those motherfuckers work the street. They hear that shit because they got informants. Because that's how they do in the Dirty South, man.
So here's what the court writes. As this court has written, because I have to use my Richard Pryor white guy voice. As this court has written, if a suspect makes a reference to an attorney that is ambiguous or equivocal in that a reasonable police officer in light of the circumstances would have understood only that the suspect might be invoking his right to counsel, the cessation of questioning is not required. In my view, the defendant's ambiguous and equivocal reference to a lawyer dog does not constitute an invocation of counsel that warrants termination of the interview. And from 2015 to the present, he is sitting in jail on $2 million bond.
Oh, they don't want it. Oh, man. What? $2 million? Oh, that's some
because, you know, the Constitution of the United States says you're entitled to a reasonable bond. How is $2 million for a poor 24-year-old black kid reasonable?
Paul Manafort was on $10 million, and he's on house arrest. And he's got fucking passports out the ass. That is so fucking obvious, man. Come on. I mean, everybody's not able to shift gears. Okay, in terms
this presents real... Look, let's understand the criminal law... For the biggest part in this country, the criminal law in state courts is used primarily as a cudgel of oppression against poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, like I said to begin with, hard cases make bad law.
it's real hard to get all to work up a real proper feel and a big time sad for a guy who's charged with raping a couple of preteen girls.
Right. And remember, charge doesn't mean he did it. That means he's been charged. You know, you got to see, you got to get the evidence, discovery, you know, what, you know, that's why you have to have good representation.
Now, there's no pictures, you know, of the arresting officers or anything here. But answer me a question. And this is an example of the lengths to which the courts will go to come up with an absurd result on an obvious fact pattern. The sex crimes detective of the New Orleans Police Department, to whom he purportedly made his incriminating statement, is named, and like I said, I got no photos, Nigel, N-I-J-E-L, Badu.
Mm-hmm. Badu?
Badu, B-A-D-D-O-O.
Oh, he's Indian. He's Indian. I mean, I would say I would bet if I were to bet.
So he's probably never heard another human being referred to as dog. I don't know the man. I'm having a real hard time here coming up. There is some jurisprudential gymnastics going on in this case. I mean, they could have just as easily written the opinion by saying, this guy's going to Angola for life. Goodbye.
If Badu is over 60 and let's say he's East Indian, and I have to see what caste, you know, how dark his skin is.
All
remember,
right.
There's a lot of shit going on. A lot of East Indians.
We
don't
do
like,
have this. We do. We
black
do.
Folk.
We do have this thing called the internet. Well,
man, this is a good talk, man. This is a good talk.
Well, you
this is crazy. You know. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Nigel O. Badu, age 45, New Orleans. Louisiana.
Oh, hell no. He'd be over that. Fucking 45, no.
Mm-mm. But there's no picture. Come on.
Nigel Badu, yeah.
Apparently,
And he's the public defender in... What parish is it?
No. He's the cop. He's the sex crimes detective.
Oh, he's the cop. That's weird. Usually the sex crime detectives are usually women. But, you know, because they got to do the forensics and stuff like that. I just don't, I mean, who, 45? No.
As of October 17th, 2017, he's child abuse detective Nigel Badu.
Even more reason he should know that. Dealing with kids. You have to make them comfortable. You know, you have to make them comfortable if you want to interview them. You know, talk about, you know, some latest rap songs, talk about, I don't know, Kodak Black or, you know, something like that. Hey, have you seen the Patty Cake video? You know, something like that. But you have to see that shit. That shit's funny, man. You got to see that video. Oh, it's funny. Oh, that is really sad. I'm not saying look, because just get this straight. Just because you get arrested for that, it doesn't mean he did it. He probably, you know, we don't know. I don't know that the evidence.
Well, from what I can gather, he says that he did it to one, but he didn't do it to the other, which is not much in the way of a defense.
That's really not. That's fucked up. But you know, he deserves his due process, but $2 million.
Well, it's that lawyer dog thing that's driving me nuts.
Well, that's the comic, right?
How do you send...
Lawyer dog.
I mean, okay, it was real cute when they sent the goofy, uptight white cop around to Fred Sanford's place, okay? That was real funny, because, you know, he was so clearly not hip to, you know,
what was his name?
Hood.
Hoppy?
Hoppy, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So 17, how are you a 43-year-old cop on the New Orleans Police Department who does not know the term of reference dog?
I'm sorry, 43 is young, man. No.
I mean, there's got to be a degree of willful, practicing of a fraud upon the court. Well, no, Your Honor, he said lawyer dog. I don't know what a lawyer dog means. Because this is an appeals court, after all. It's the Supreme Court of Louisiana. They don't have anybody sitting in front of them testifying. They're judging from the printed written record. You know, transcripts
right.
and stuff like that. So they had a suppression hearing where they sought to his lawyer tried to suppress this statement and brought up the fact that he tried to terminate the interview by saying, "I want a lawyer, dog." And the prosecutor, in turn, had to argue, "Well, that's not a clear statement of his desire for a lawyer. Who knows what a lawyer dog is? Maybe it's one of those German shepherds for a lawyer who's blind. That would be a lawyer dog, Your Honor. Clearly, this is an ambiguous statement, and as an ambiguous statement, they did not have to terminate the interview."
Do we know anything about the educational level of the defendant, or if he was under the influence?
Poor black and 24 in Louisiana. You sort it out.
Okay, so that's the way people talk. I mean, everybody's not able to shift gears. You know, go from street corner talk to the King's English. You know,
So now do we have to give this some sort of practical education to poor kids growing up? Listen, when they bust you, and they will, don't call them dog. Say, "I want a lawyer."
Right.
I mean, if you're the ACLU of Louisiana, do you print up a card that says, "Hello, I am mute. I want a lawyer," and just say, don't say anything to the cops, just hand them a card? Well, you know, it wasn't signed or anything. That was an ambiguous statement of a desire to have a lawyer. He didn't say it out loud. That's a lawyer card.
Yeah,
Who knows what a lawyer card is? I'm sorry, cases like this just piss me off.
That's insane. Well, you know, that is really, like you said, oh my God. This is starting to really kind of roil me. That is really bad. But that's why it pays to be well-rounded. You know what I'm saying? So, oh my God, that $2 billion. Damn. Yeah, it sounds like the way you described it, he kind of admitted first of all, do not talk to the fucking cops. Do not talk to the people that arrest you. They're going to make it like they're going to be nice to you. Don't fucking talk to them. Let them do the work. I don't give a fuck if you're guilty or not. Let them do the work.
Well, and this is...
Anybody
you know, this is
don't
this,
say shit to those motherfuckers. What?
This is not to say that everything is hunky-dory. I mean, the police do not all cops, you know, because right next to that, there's a story about some guy who was walking in the quarter and two dudes came up and tried to steal his wallet and then stabbed him in the chest, neck, and face and left him to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a manhunt on for two people because they got him on video doing it. But you know, I understand the desire to see justice done, but we got rules. And see, if this had been a nice person, and it was a charge of, say, extortion from the bank or embezzlement from the bank because his house was about to be foreclosed on, you know, they might have put that comma in between lawyer and dog.
Yo, Bob, what if he said, "Oh, I want my barrister, Commodore."
Well, that's ambiguous because we don't have barristers in the United States, so he would have had to lose.
Well, he SOL.
But I had to bring that up. I had it in the stack, and I couldn't because that's a real thorn in the side kind of thing.
That is. That's fucking comma. God damn it. These people are ignorant, man. What the fuck?
dude is gonna, and you know what? They've probably got the they probably got evidence enough to get him without the confession. Especially if they did anything resembling a responsible job following up on the in terms of the actual physical evidence of the rape investigation.
Right.
You know, this is not about Bob feeling sorry for an accused rapist. This is about this is about either we're a nation of laws or we're not. And there is
there is a body
of law and especially, you know, Gideon versus Wainwright's maybe what 40, 50 years old that established, you know, that right to counsel language. And from the moment it was announced until now, it has been slowly and inexorably eroded. So that we're going to get to the point that if you don't hire an aircraft to skywrite, "I want my lawyer," you're not going to get one. And they're not going to stop questioning.
Well, they're going to ride you. I'll never forget what happened to me. They rode me, man. They kept waking me up. And I'm like, "No, I'm not." You know, and they try to get you off guard. You know, I'm like, no. And they put something in front of you like, "Well, did you want a Coke? You want something to drink? You want a hamburger?" No, I'm good. I want to go back to sleep. They couldn't understand why I kept sleeping. I'm like, "I'm fucking tired. What do you want? I have nothing to say to you. I already told you what's up. I have nothing to say to you. Don't bother me anymore until my attorney comes." And that's the best advice I can. And it's not about me. I'm just saying this is just life advice, man. Anybody. Because anything can happen to anybody, anytime. Life is precarious. But you know what? I just want to say, one more thing. I feel vindicated. I felt a little bit bad last week and the week before and yesterday. Well, first of all, yesterday I called John Kelly a Southie cracker. And damn it, if it wasn't editorial in the New York Times, yeah, they call him a racist. He is. What the fuck is wrong with him?
Of course he is. And he's not just that. He's a Trumpanzee, okay? He wasn't dragged unwillingly into the Trump administration. He went into the Trump administration because he shared the philosophy of the Trump administration. He wanted to get in there and shit on some poor brown people. He couldn't get in there fast enough. See, he spent a career in the Marine Corps where he couldn't let his racist flag fly. Because they would have cashiered his Semper Fi ass and sent him packing.
Yep.
Because the military is very, very serious about that.
Why couldn't he goddamn apologize to the representative when it was clear? The whole world knows he lied. Now he looks like a fucking reputable.
Well, because then the Tangerine Tiberius would have trashed him on Twitter. And remember, he doesn't like that because he has already said that Trump has spoken to him worse than he was ever spoken to in 40 years in the United States Marine Corps.
Okay, so fine. Now we got this abusive thing going. Like when people get abused, they abuse other people. You know, because he got shit on. Now he wants to shit on other people. But yeah, he's got that pent-up shit. And then to get rid of that hillbilly harlot. And I called her a nasty ass bitch months ago. And you know what? I'm glad I did. And what the fuck is wrong with her?
Oh, Sarah. What? Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags?
I can't stand that motherfucking bitch. Who the fuck is dressing that goddamn woman? I'm a fucking heterosexual man. I can dress her better than that. What the fuck is wrong with her?
Well, you know, it's
she has to go back to being a goddamn lumberjack or an EMT or a fucking prison guard because orange is his new hack. What the fuck is wrong with her?
Well, I will defer to the female members of the Horn Family Community Congregation on this. I will not body shame.
Have you not seen her fucking dress? Man, that's the energy. She wears goddamn caterpillars in her fucking eyes.
Well, see, that's the thing. On my Twitter feed, I think it was Monique on my Twitter feed the week or so ago said, "What's up with the," and used the little spider icons, the little spider emojis. "What's up with the spiders on her eyes?" And I've never had to, you know, I did theater and stuff, and I've worn my fair share of makeup. but I never had to do the eyelashes. I don't think I would. I'm not brave enough to do the eyelashes and let somebody that close to my eyes. How long does it take? Okay, so maybe I can get a little input from the women in the Horn Family Community Congregation. If y'all wear those cat spiders on your eyes, how long does it take to put those terrifying things on?
I don't know, but I've seen in the bathroom, I've seen glue. Sometimes there's glue involved. Can you imagine putting fucking toxic glue near your fucking eyeball?
No, sorry, can't.
Going
back to when I was I started doing theater when I was like, you know, high school. Yeah. And so like 14 years old, and the first time one of my female classmates leaned over me doing my makeup to put the eyeliner on, I had a case of the creepies for about a week after that. I was like, do I really have to wear this? Because this is terrifying. Because then you got to hold your eyes open real broad while that stuff dries. And, you know, and she's just, and it tickles and it itches. And all in the world you want to do is touch your eye. And don't touch your eye.
Right. Don't rub your eye. Yeah, I did a little drama. Yeah, they say don't touch your eye, don't rub your eye, because then we'll have to do it all over and it's going to smear.
I just got a thing from Scott and Punky. It's visual on the radio, Dancing About Architecture. But it's a split screen, and Scott merely says, Uncle Fester, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, separated at birth? But see, I know her type from growing up in the Baptist church. One, she's a preacher's kid. So that probably means she had the foulest, most vulgar mouth of anybody in that entire church. Two, she's Mike Huckabee's kid, and her brother tortured a dog to death by lynching it, beating it, and burning it at a scout camp or some such.
Damn.
And the Arkansas State Police covered it up when he was governor.
Oh my God.
And
I'm sorry.
She's the original mean girl. She is from that mean girl school of winning friends and influencing people. I mean,
that's the way she comes across.
She's a smart ass up behind the podium, and she knows she can get away with it. The pushback has been hilarious and brutal.
Let me ask you this. When she comes out, I've seen this more than four times now, so I can comment on it. And I want to get your take. What is this shit when she comes out like a school mom in her fucked up outfit that doesn't fit because she has that damn lumberjack body? And then she comes out trying to wear a goddamn Tobleton dress, and she, you know.
I'm going to get email over your body shaming, Todd.
Give a fuck. That bitch is she's a fucking nasty ass bitch. She needs to go back to being a goddamn EMT or a fucking lumberjack or a fucking prison guard, and that's my fucking fault.
Okay, so just so you know. Yeah, please.
I don't give a fuck. All right. She comes out and she says, "Good morning" or "Good afternoon." And then she will not fucking proceed until everyone in the goddamn room says, "Good afternoon, Sarah."
Well, that day that she showed up to criticize the congresswoman's hats, which she wears as a living memorial to her grandma who loved to wear hats to church.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned hats to church earlier. And
by the way, she's a doctor. She's a fucking doctor of education, former principal.
Right.
Just want to put that in there.
Yeah, right. More credentials than Sarah Huckabee will ever have in all of her natural born days.
There you go.
As Carol Baker pointed out, and she shows up wearing a tablecloth, and the picture of her with this dress with this big old flower on it, and I said. Sarah is wearing the classy hillbilly orchid classy dress from the Sam Drucker flower sack collection.
That's my fucking point.
Fuck it. The bitch will be better off wearing a goddamn gunny sack. That's what she's used to. And scratch her ass. Fucking nasty ass bitch. Fuck her.
By the way,
I wouldn't let her suck my goddamn dick. Fuck her. She's not worried. Fuck her.
Matt in San Francisco says you can do face in about an hour. As far as, we know that the Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags is getting paid at least an hour a day to do her face. Because, you know, you get to do that on the job. But then again, let's be fair here. If she came out and was not done, you know, she came out and didn't have her face did, then there'd be all people, you know, honey, have you never heard of Maybelline? I mean, really?
Right.
So, I mean, I got some sympathy.
I agree with you. But that's, you know what, sometimes but you have she's to make so, fun of people.
So you're saying she's just so awful it doesn't matter.
Well, you know what? I was trying to give her the Trump. I was trying to give her a 10. However, she does not seem interested in telling the truth, number one. And number two, because I just learned this. I think they had to take an oath just like the president to uphold the Constitution.
Oh, yeah.
She's fucking lying her ass off every day.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think every day that Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags walks out there, she proves she's an atheist. And that's not me. That's not me gooning on an atheist. Okay?
No.
But she belongs to a hardcore evangelical fundamentalist religion that says lying is wrong. It's a sin. If she was to drop over dead before she said forgive me Jesus for lying, she'd be on a barbecue spit in hell. Okay? That's their religion.
Oh, Bob,
I grew up in it.
Bob, I know it. I'm telling you, because see, I don't know if you know this, but I have, there's all kinds of people in my family, and I have all kinds of friends who look different ways. And I know, because I have all kinds of young and old white women in my circle, and they tell me shit about what happens when people get pulled over, and they get pulled over and how they're treated. But this woman, Sarah, okay, why is it that someone, what woman, how come, and the reason I brought that up is because this Baptist thing is like a damn cult. The Southern Baptist thing is almost like a cult.
It's the largest cult in the United States.
They they're all nice at first, and then they tell you, well, you shouldn't wear that to church, and you need to do your hair this way, and da, da, da. I mean, they ran my friend out of church. She wanted to take her kids to church. She was like, I can't go back there. She was like, I was trying to make
network connections. I know because the particular church I grew up in, I remember, oh, it was years ago now, but Agnes and the family and I had gone down home to see Dad, or maybe Mom and Dad, and our next door neighbor, who was she was ancient, and she was a good Christian woman, and she was a pillar in the church, and she was one of those little old blue-haired ladies that cooked down in the fellowship hall kitchen, and oh, mercy!
Mm-hmm.
That woman could make a pot of green beans that would make you cry. But she meant it in only the sincerest, most lovely way. She said, "Oh, while you're here, you've got to come to church. You got to come to your home church. You know, we have a Negro family now."
Negro. What was this, in 1936?
No, it's a Southern Baptist church, and there were no black folks in the church when I was growing up in it. But they had a Negro family now. They've gotten all broad-minded, and they're not racist anymore because they've got a Negro family. And she said it all soft, like, we've got a Negro family.
You can't write this shit. Oh, my God.
I'm not making anything up.
Boy,
and I showed up to church, here. And there they were. There they were.
There they were. Oh, no.
Just got, you know, I don't know, maybe they just got a little too wrought with the happening music over at the AME and decided they'd come and listen to the really boring organ music with the Baptists for a while.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, wait. You know what? Religion is a funny thing, man. I think people ought to keep their fucking religion to themselves because you can't win. This is just don't make any fucking sense. I mean, that's what people believe. That's why I'm like I'm an Episcopalian. I don't really go to church anymore, but I believe in God. I'm spiritual. But I'm like, even as a young person, I was like, well, why do you have all these little sectional shit? You either believe in God or you don't. I mean, you can call it different names, but that's all it is. I mean, we didn't come out of nothing. I mean, you know, but I did all this is bullshit. But yeah, it's a big mess.
Okay, wait. I got to pass out a cowbell here. That goes to Clarence, who just said Sarah Huckleberry Sandbags looks like an adult Wednesday Addams. Okay, there's no body shaming there. That's just really but it's terribly, terribly, terribly true.
You know what? If I was body shaming, I apologize. I just feel like she brings it on herself. Because at that level, she looks like she's fucking grabbing shit off the rack at Walmart. Is she that hard up for money?
No.
She can't fucking buy a proper wardrobe?
No. She probably paid a lot of money for that to people who, when she walked out of the trying on room, said, "Oh, honey, it looks wonderful on you." Because, of course, I'm sure she's not buying her clothes there in that heathen Washington, D.C. She goes home to Arkansas where they know how to dress.
She should not fuck with dresses. She's a pantsuit type person. You know, jacket and pants.
Oh, Jesus, don't say pantsuit. Don't say pantsuit.
Yeah, I did. And I know exactly the connotations of that. Yeah, I do. But, you know, it is what it is. That's probably why she doesn't do it.
And by the way, Terry... says Jim Rome on his daily radio sports talk show, The Jungle 1090 on TuneIn. Often I used to listen to Jim Rome a lot. Have a take and don't suck. I never had the nerve to use that on this program. Often plays a particular outburst of LeBron James where he used dog very prominently. This could help the New Orleans defense in a significant way. I'm sure it's up on YouTube, and I'm looking around as we speak. Signed, Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Terry in Amherst. Do you not say the H in Amherst? Oh,
Amherst.
I bet it is. Is it Amherst?
I don't know. That's Michigan, right?
No, that's Massachusetts. But we got the running gag with Darlene in Connecticut, because of course that's a silent C. Because English makes so sense, you know.
Oh yeah, there's no way Amherst.
And we got silent R. Lamar. So maybe it's Amherst.
Amherst, yeah, it is Amherst.
Yeah, right. Right, because I had to be taught how to say Wista. For Worcester.
Wista. Yeah. You know.
I'm learning. So. The hillbilly can be taught.
Yo, everybody, we need to support Bob's efforts because the beats aren't cutting it. Okay, when Sarsaparilla.
No, we haven't had a single order for Sassy Sarsaparilla this evening. I got to tell you,
I like Sarsaparilla, by the way. I think it's tasty. But
I was taught early on as a little boy. You know, never mind the root. You can if you just take a green twig of it off the tree part. And just strip the leaves, and you can just chew on it, and it gets kind of woody, and it's kind of like a you know, little toothbrush, and it tastes real good too.
Well, that was a big thing in the city back in the 90s. You know, everybody used to walk around with that twig in their mouth, like in the hood. You know, that was a thing. You probably didn't know that. Yeah, you know, with the white tea crowd. You know the white tea gang, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The white tea.
Yeah.
Crisp white tea with the white beater underneath.
You're right, and the jeans rolled up at the cuff.
Yep, there you go. And Timberlands, but that's passe now. Yeah.
By the way, my Sperry Dock Ciders
finally went to their long home. I had a lot of email about those. They did. They got to the point where the soles were flapping when I walked, and every now and then they'd roll under me, and I'd go tumbling forward like sort of a the front end of one of those Chevy Chase pratfalls. And Agnes finally said, "Time for a new pair of shoes, Bob." So, yeah, you mentioned Timberland made me think of Sperry, which right, yeah.
Yeah, that was our time, man. That was a thing in the 80s, man. That's how we grew up. I remember that.
Well, I mean, I'm just a redneck. I can't help it, and I do not wear socks until the temperature drops below 30.
And I used to get funky, man. I remember I wore mine until the funk, and it stressed out so much.
That's what the spray's for every night. You know, if it's good enough for the bowling alley, it's good enough for Bob.
But you know that sole. The sole was cool because when you would walk, it would flex and it would open. You know, it had these little creases in the bottom, not creases, but
right. That's what keeps you from slipping. You know, it doesn't just keep you from slipping on wooden decks on sailboats, there, Muffy. It keeps you from slipping on slick concrete and busting ass in the middle of God and everybody downtown.
Oh man.
Well, we got to get out of here, Todd. But it's been a delightful conversation, my friend. And we didn't talk about barbecue not once. There's something wrong with us.
Look, this is so crucial. Yeah, I'm coming over with the barbecue. I'm coming over with the chicken. You're going to do the ribs.
Well, and you know, like I said, we've got a third member of the barbecue society now in Brother Deacon Asa. And
I want to hear about his endeavors.
Oh, he's making endeavors. I get photographs.
Okay. And I want to hear how Tracy's doing with her wonderful grill.
Yeah, Tracy. I hadn't heard much from Tracy about her grill. I don't know. She needs an acorn too, though. Todd, have a good one, my friend.
You too, bud.
Later now.
All right.
Bye. Our buddy Todd from South Carolina, Stan. That was a Todd conversation for the ages. We went all over the place. That's how conversation radio is supposed to work. Anyway, that's the end of the program. So Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And then, like I said, I'm gone Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of next week. We got big doings in D.C. And I guess tomorrow the fundraising goal will be somewhere around $395. And thanks to everybody, thanks to all our subscribers, thanks to one and all for getting us this far. And then when the Patreon hits, as noted, I will give the sponsor list there as well. Because right now we have just enough Patreon subscribers to cover one night of broadcasting for the month. That's where we are. If you'd like to join in at Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And everything comes, it's the second of the month. So if you decide to become a subscriber right now, it won't come out until December the 1st. So think about it. So thanks to everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly to our moderators. Thank you to Steve and to Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.